Tuesday, May 23rd, and we will begin with a moment of silence. And with that, I will ask the city clerk to do a roll call for quorum.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Barton.
Here.
Councilmember Edwards.
Here.
Councilmember Landrum.
Here.
Councilmember Ford.
Here.
And Mayor Wixom.
Here. And with that, we will go to the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'll ask Councilmember Edwards to lead us. Good evening. Thank you, everyone. We're going to begin with closed session. Mr. Neumeier.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. No closed session items to report tonight.
Thank you very much. And with that, we will go to Mayor and Council Member comments, reports, and presentations. And for something different, I'm going to lead off. And I know I don't usually, but I have a list tonight. Where to start? All these things, and it's nice to be in person since we were gone 2 weeks ago. Doing Zoom isn't really my thing. We attended, which was why we were gone. We were in Sacramento attending a Pacific Offshore Wind Summit, May 8th to May 10th, and we'll be able to report out on that, I'm sure, over the next few months. The harbor manager and or city manager will be giving updates at the upcoming council meetings, so we can kind of start doing that on a regular basis so you know what we have going on in the community. We reach coordinated for three of the offshore wind companies to pay a visit to the Central Coast next week. They'll be touring San Luis Obispo, Port San Luis, Diablo Canyon. They'll be holding a symposium at Cal Poly on Thursday and then visiting Morro Bay on Friday. I want to share the risk management workshop that Councilmember Landrum and I attended last week in Paso Robles. It was hosted by our insurance company, CJPIA, and it's for newly elected, hoping to make sure we make good decisions and not those that would challenge our insurance company. All of you have probably seen the dredge in town. Bikini is here doing its yearly dredge. Next year they'll be here doing the inner channel as well, and I believe the harbor director has a meeting set up with us to meet the colonel tomorrow for the Army Corps engineer. I want to congratulate our Morro Bay High School seniors who will be graduating June 8th, so that will be before we meet again, and do a shout out to all of them. We are really proud to have the high school in our community and all those wonderful young adults. So congratulations to the class of 2023. I think everybody knows we just had Ironman last week. Saw a lot of locals out there. I think that overall the event went very well, and I want to commend our police department along with our other emergency services and public works departments. They did a phenomenal job coordinating and organizing the event, working with the committee from Ironman itself, and it seemed to go pretty smooth. I know there's been some comments and concerns with some traffic closures, and I think that we'll have an opportunity to have a discussion before it comes back next year, as they have two more years on their contract. And then last but not least, most importantly, we recently held interviews for city manager and for that recruitment, and we hope to be announcing a selection here in the very near future. With that, I will turn it to my right, and I will offer it up.
I attended a variety of different meetings the past week or two. The first one was the IWMA, which is the Integrated Waste Management Authority for SLO County, and they had a very interesting meeting that was about 4 hours long, and it included representatives of cities, but it also had, apparently for the first time ever, pulled together all the haulers. There are a number of independent hauling companies that take trash. And it was just very well done, lots and lots of information on, like, how school programs are done on trash and just lots of other things. It was a very good presentation. I also attended the HSOC committee meeting, and that is the Homeless Services Organizing Committee. That's a countywide group. And, again, very, very interesting as you sit there and hear the different people who are doing different programs presenting their outlook, their efforts. And then last but not least was Ironman, as the mayor mentioned. And I had the pleasure of watching the swimmers and then the first bicyclist take off. And my favorite part was that I hung around to see the very last swimmers to see who was that who had the gumption to just keep going, slogging their way through the bay. And at the very, very end, there were three women. And when they got to the getting out place, they were laughing uproariously, and I just thought, this is great. That's the right attitude to have about this thing. They had made it, and now they were on to the bikes. So anyway, that was great fun. So that's mine.
I just wanted to say, Mayor Wixom already updated on the events that we had been to together, but also we went to follow up with the offshore wind this week. Last Friday, we went to a group meeting with some of the Native American tribes on transmission, bringing the offshore wind transmission onto shore. And I just wanted to share what I was really impacted with, that I have, having already been to that big seminar in Sacramento, I learned something further. I learned that, and I think the other council members will be interested in this too, with each wind farm, each one of the companies that won the bid, in order for them to get their transmission onto, into PG&E's substation there behind the power plant, they each need their own substation. So that is a total of three substations. And then if Morro Bay is to decide to do the battery storage plant, that would be a fourth substation. So that's just something that I didn't know about, and I thought that was the public would want to know that. Another thing that I didn't know, I knew that the federal government has said that we will have 5 gigawatts of offshore wind by 2030, I think, and by 2045 it will be 25 gigawatts. But I found out that PG&E here in Morro Bay can only ever take on 1 gigawatt ever, unless it were to expand their substation there. And then at Diablo, they can only handle 4 gigawatts ever. So I just found those to be interesting facts, and I thought I'd share them.
All right, I'll go. I want to say, Councilmember Landrum, when you weren't sure what day that meeting was on, they all do. We were jumping from meeting to meeting, so they all kind of run together. What day is what? And yeah, I hear you. I want to start off with thanking everyone for being here tonight. And I also attended the IWMA orientation along with Councilmember Barton. It was really neat. I'm not their liaison. I'm not their board member, but I just wanted to learn more about what's happening within our county. And it was really informative. I mean, from super basic information to more in-depth information to the big picture, to what the needs are, to what problems we've had and how we've overcome them, and all the things. And so it was a really I was really happy that they invited all council, and I was able to make it. Another exciting evening we had here in Morro Bay. Our public works staff hosted a community meeting for many folks that attended here in our community, as well as all of our council members who all showed up to listen in on the Highway 1, Highway 41, and Main intersection. That meeting was really great and informational, and I really appreciated everyone who came out to listen, to learn, and to provide input. It was really, really informative in many ways. And to piggyback back off of that, I also am the liaison for the Public Works Advisory Board, and they hosted their last meeting at Morro Bay High School, and that was a really nice change of pace, change of scenery. And there was a really great turnout there as well from our community, as well as a few high school students who provided input. So it was really wonderful to hear. I would say that the majority of that meeting really centered around the same topic, which was the intersection and what to do, whether roundabout, traffic light, something else, nothing, you know, what to do with that intersection. And so that was wonderful. I also had the honor of attending the Peace Officers Memorial Day in Paso Robles. That was a beautiful way to honor our fallen law enforcement officers. It was just a very thoughtful and solemn day, but a beautiful way to celebrate those who gave their all for our safety. And then I want to talk about prom. That happened this last weekend. That was exciting to see everyone. Thankfully, for things like Facebook, if you weren't there, you at least got to see what everyone's kids looked like. And it was absolutely gorgeous on my Facebook feed and Instagram feed to see everybody. It looked like everyone just, you know, was ready for a great time. And, of course, gearing up for that graduation day. So I want to echo what the mayor said. Congratulations, seniors. It's a huge, huge milestone in your life. And I'm proud of all of you for sticking to it, and good luck in your future. And lastly, I also want to talk, and I won't, since most has been said about Iron Man 70.3, I just want to say, I want to give you a couple of personal interactions that I had while I was attending this event. First of all, I was there before the sun rose, and so I was there all day, and you know, hearing the stories, everyone was kind of relaxed, even though they were gearing up for this big race. It's kind of that calm before the storm, right? So everybody's just kind of getting in the moment and their focus, and but people felt kind of chatty. You know, I was standing around, and they wanted to tell their story, and I was asking, where are you from? How did you hear about us? Is this your first time? And during that time, I discovered that quite a few athletes that are from outside of Morro Bay, they've done Ironmans before, and they said, you know, when we hear that it's an inaugural Ironman in a city, we typically don't go. We don't do the first year. We wait till second year when those, you know, everything's been ironed out, all the wrinkles have been ironed out, and then we attend. But we heard it was in Morro Bay, and we had to come, because Morro Bay is absolutely gorgeous, and we love, you know, when we were looking through the photos, or we were looking to see what it's all about, we wanted to come see it for ourselves. And so I think we have a pretty beautiful gym here at Morro Bay, and a lot of people were really interested in coming and finding out what Morro Bay is all about. And hopefully they come back. Maybe not just for Ironman, but maybe they come back just to enjoy our beautiful city and all that we can offer them. And so I just want to say one more time, a thank you to everyone who was involved. It was a huge undertaking from our safety personnel. That was a huge undertaking. I know there was a lot of stress. An event that big, to have virtually no injuries at all, that really says a lot to the organizers and to our city staff who helped implement this race. But we were ready for the worst case scenario. And I want to thank all of our safety personnel for that. But I also want to thank our chamber for doing their best to inform our businesses on what's coming and how to prepare for that. And I really want to give a shout out to our chief of police, Amy Watkins, superstar. I mean, really. I have to say that every single organizer that I talked to gave you kudos. Every single one. They were all like, your chief of police is the absolute best chief we've ever worked with. Hands down, if we could take her with us to every single city, we would do it. So I just want to say, amazing. Thank you for all you do and for your team and all that they did. But just thank you to our volunteers as well, because without our volunteers, this wouldn't have happened. And we had everyone from students, little kids, to elderly folks that were out there cheering on our athletes, and just the camaraderie and the everything was just so positive. So I just want to give a huge thank you to our community. So that's it.
It sounds like I wish I was here to experience some of that, you know, joy that you are sharing with us tonight. I was actually attending my son's graduation down south, so I got to partake in that. I got to attend the first senior center board meeting at the first of the month, and what a great group of dedicated individuals who are really looking to broaden what it means to be a senior. And I really think that's a wonderful direction that they're going. They're becoming much more of an activity-based group, and they really are stressing that in their conversation and what they're promoting, and they're focused on more activities, especially like the bocce ball and the pickleball, and how they can, you know, work out those activities for the our community to attend and utilize. They are very proud of their Tunes and Tidelands, and that was also a focus of conversation, and they are actively, no pun intended, looking for sponsors. So if you're a business out there or an individual that wants to volunteer or help in a sponsorship type of way, please feel free to contact the Senior Center directly. Thank you.
Mayor, can I say one last thing? Really quick. I totally spaced and did not think Michael Wombolt, our director of Visit Morro Bay. That would be a huge, major misstep for me not to thank him. He did an amazing job, and his board as well, in bringing Ironman and implementing Ironman into our, you know, bringing the event here. And so I just wanted to thank him, and I'm sorry that I didn't say it earlier.
And I again will echo that. Yes, Visit Morro Bay did a great job marketing the event, and totally agree. Every comment I heard was about our chief and how well run the event was, and most of it in part because of her collaboration. So working with the rest. I'm going to turn it over to our city manager, Mr. Carpenter.
Mayor, I just wanted to take a moment to thank all the city employees that worked over the weekend, and I asked Chief Watkins to provide a very preliminary brief report out on our experience with the Ironman.
Well, good evening. Thank you for certainly the kind words, and you know, we started this back January, all of your city staff team, and that was the task that was provided to us, was to make sure that this was a well-organized and safe event. And certainly every single staff member from Fire, Harbor, Public Works, certainly Chamber, Michael Wombolt, did I mention everybody? The recreation department. You know, it was a big lift, and I'll say something about the agencies that assisted us as well. But I have a few little statistics here from Ironman themselves. They had a total of 1,998 total check-ins, so athletes actually were in Morro Bay registered. Youngest participant was 18. We had some, younger participants who wanted to get out there and do it, but they are not allowed by age. They'll have to come back next year. Our oldest participant was 77. We had a blind participant. We had an autistic participant. We had certainly some participants who had amputees. So they were absolutely tested. Athletes from California, 1,523. Athletes from other U.S. states, 393. Athletes from other countries, 88. And it was 19 countries represented that came to Morro Bay. Athletes from Morro Bay were six. I know we had Andrew from Fire and Nicole Taylor from Police that participated, and both did very well. Facebook event page followers, 570. Number of times our Facebook posts were seen during race week, 14,685. Ironman triathlon Instagram followers, 889,000. Ironman app followers for Morro Bay tracking, 16,886. And then Morro Bay website visits over race week, so that's just the Morro Bay website, that's 27,421. So that kind of gives you an idea of the type of interest that an event like this brought to our city. Like I mentioned earlier, upon the announcement that Ironman was coming to Morro Bay, your staff was tasked with working closely with Ironman to provide a well-organized, safe event. Police, Fire, Harbor worked diligently to create safety plans. I know that Becca Kelly from the Harbor Department was personally called out by a well-respected and a lot of experience, you know, 30-plus years, I think it was, in Harbor Safety Plan. And Becca was absolutely given a good job from this individual on her safety plan for the event like this. I know we had one rescue in the water from something that Ironman had briefed us on, or certainly Harbor, on what happens to athletes in cold water. And the athlete was not willing to get out, and Harbor had to step in along with Fire and pull the athlete out. And that was the only real rescue. We had 12 did not finish in the water. I think people realized quickly how cold that water was. And so we were absolutely, our medical safety plan by Chief McCrane was absolutely flawless. We worked hard on our safety plan on law enforcement side. Could not have done this without our law enforcement partners. We are 18 sworn here in Morro Bay, and this required 80 law enforcement personnel to make sure that just in Morro Bay itself it was safe and well organized. Additionally, residents and business owners were contacted in person through mailers and with the use of social media to identify road closures and potential delays. I can tell you through this process, we learned a lot. And that's something that Councilmember Ford had mentioned, was sometimes these athletes don't come to the first one because they know that there's going to be some wrinkles that need to be ironed out. I can tell you that to have 2,000 athletes the first year is kind of unheard of, and that speaks to certainly Morro Bay. I heard constantly from Ironman staff and the participants for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, how welcome they felt in Morro Bay and how excited they are to return to Morro Bay for future events. The beauty of this, of Morro Bay, certainly spoke for itself. Public Works did an outstanding job making sure that the course, the roadways were race ready, which took a lot of time and man hours for that. Certainly like to thank the city staff, Michael Womble from Visit Morro Bay, and then Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. They were with the staff every step of the way, making sure that we had their support. And then I wanted to name off some agencies. Certainly Fire, Cal Fire, CHP, Caltrans, they handled the things outside of Morro Bay. We had a slow ambulance was on scene, handling the ambulance requirements, safety requirements there. But just on the law enforcement side of things, keeping this event safe, our Morro Bay Police Department Explorers were out, our volunteers were out, all of our Morro Bay PD staff, not just the officers, but all staff were out. Big thank you to Slow PD, Slow SO, Lompoc PD. We reached out as far as we could to gain some more law enforcement partners. Santa Maria PD, Arroyo Grande PD, Grover Beach PD, Pismo PD, Cuesta College PD, Cal Poly PD, Atascadero State Hospital Police Department. Fish and Wildlife, State Parks, Atascadero PD, Paso Robles PD, and then we also reached out to our 9th Civil Service team, which provides some very excellent hazmat and things like that. And we had a lot of other safety aspects that we in law enforcement know that we have to have. You know, we prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And your city was prepared for this event. We learned a lot. We'll get better next year. I've also heard the things with some of the traffic, but I'll tell you, I was here all day running around from each location, and traffic was impacted, but we didn't have any long delays. Some people were probably kept from doing certain things, but we were off the highway by 1 p.m., and we were really relieved kind of in the downtown area. Embarcadero area was reopened right about 4 o'clock. So it was a very efficient event. I've gone through and made sure that the Ironman footprint has been lifted. As of this afternoon, I reached out back to Ironman, making sure that everything was going to be taken off of our parking lots and things like that, and was reassured that it would be done today. And so I just want to certainly thank the city team, and I really think that not only the community was well represented, and we all appreciate certainly the community's willingness to welcome this event into our community, but I think we represented certainly this city well, and this city showed very well to our visitors, and hopefully they will return. And I have a strong feeling they will.
Amy, I was thinking of you when I had to leave to go pick up some family at the Slow Airport about 3 o'clock, and I happened to be driving down the highway next to a threesome of the officers from Slow. And I realized after a while, hey, wait a minute, that one officer looks a little different. And it was the first time I've ever seen a woman on a motorcycle in a police kind of a way. And so I wanted to try and get next to them so I could roll down my window and thank them. But it didn't work out at the stoplights. So,
anything else, Mr. Carpenter? Thank you. Thank you, Chief Watkins. Well done by everybody, by all the city. With that, we have some presentations this evening. We're going to do our first resolution for Hunger Awareness Day. So I'm going to invite you up while I read this. Give me a few minutes, and we'll move on from there. So a proclamation from the City of Morro Bay declaring June 2nd, 2023 to be Hunger Awareness Day. Whereas the SLO Food Bank is the lead hunger relief organization in the county, and whereas the San Luis Food Bank was founded in 1989 and has provided 34 years of hunger relief throughout the community, and whereas the SLO Food Bank provides the vital infrastructure for hunger relief and is the primary source of nutritious, free, and affordable food for over 80 partner nonprofit agencies that feed the hungry. And whereas the SLO Food Bank and its coalition partners deliver nutritious food to over 31,000 county residents every month and in every community from Napomo to San Miguel, on the coast from Los Osos to San Simeon, and to points east, including Creston, Shandon, and California Valley. And whereas the SLO Food Bank provides millions of pounds of only the most wholesome nutrition, which advances and promotes important public health outcomes, and whereas the SLO Food Bank is coordinating a countywide call to action called Hunger Awareness Day on June 2nd this year, and whereas the SLO Food Bank believes that the people of our county will again rally in a one-day push to donate much-needed funds to alleviate local hunger and elevate public health for all. And whereas the people giving donations on June 2, 2023 will raise crucial funds needed to help alleviate hunger. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Morro Bay City Council does hereby proclaim June 2, 2023 as Hunger Awareness Day in Morro Bay. And with that, the city manager, Mr. Carpenter, has a proclamation to present to you. Thank you. And Mr. Olson, if you'd like to say a few words real quickly.
I would. Thank you, Mayor Wixom.
Thank you.
Council members, city leadership, active residents, first of all, congratulations on such an amazing first year in the Ironman. You do our county proud. Thank you also for shining the light on this vital community issue. Since the beginning of pandemic and persisting today, we are seeing hunger in our community like we've not witnessed in the 34-year history of the SLO Food Bank. And over the past few months, historic inflation coupled with the end of federal hunger relief assistance puts us at the base of another mountain of surge. As compared to 2022, we're already serving 16% more households in 2023, and it's likely going to go up rapidly over the coming months. And we are honored to provide compassionate, only nutritious hunger relief, and we do so through direct distribution and our network of over 80 partner agencies. And in this community, we are particularly thankful for our partners at Coastlands Vineyard Church, the Morro Bay Lions, Rock Harbor Christian Fellowship, and the Salvation Army, who all lean in and help us in this effort to feed those who are most vulnerable among us. And with our high nutrition standards, we're not just filling bellies with food, we're actually fueling bodies. Half of those we serve are children and the elderly, and we know that good nutritious food is vital for those populations to be able to thrive. Through our bulk purchasing and strategic partnerships, we're able to really maximize every dollar donated. We turn every dollar donated into somewhere between $4 and $7 worth of purchasing power. It's absolutely incredible what we can do. And our partnerships and efficiency in purchasing food are vital because we're currently serving over 31,500 individuals in this beautiful county, which is tragic. For Morro Bay residents that are in a position to give, we hope you'll support us on June 2nd, Hunger Awareness Day. We're going to be at the Albertsons on Quintana Road. You can go to slowfoodbank.org to find out more information. Hunger is a local problem in San Luis Obispo County, and thankfully, the solution is also local. It's in the hearts of our local residents who lean in and provide time, talent, and treasure to help us with our mission. Over 87% of our budget comes from local residents leaning in to help us. And in closing, this is the second year that we're going to be offering CalFresh Enrollment Assistance, a program that is administered by the county government. County of SLO has historically had low CalFresh enrollment. CalFresh, when I was a kid, was known as food stamps. If you're outside of California, it's referred to as SNAP. It's earmarked federal funds that are given to families in need that are eligible for them to be able to buy the food that they choose. And out of the 58 counties that administer that program, the last time there was a census taken, we were 57th lowest in participation as a percent of those who are eligible. What that means for us is quite literally millions of dollars are not flowing into our community to help our neighbors in need, and tens of millions of dollars are not getting to the cash registers of our grocery stores and farmers markets. And so we're leaning in to help raise those numbers. So if anybody here or anybody watching, you or somebody you know might benefit from some assistance, come to the Morro Bay Library on June 2nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. No reservation is necessary. We'll help you navigate that process and hopefully get you signed up for CalFresh. So thank you again for supporting Hunger Awareness Day. Thank you for serving this community. We are honored to partner with you, and we appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to our next resolution, proclamation, excuse me, and this is going to be declaring National Safe Boating Week. Whereas for over 100 million Americans, boating continues to be a popular recreational activity. From coast to coast and everywhere in between, people are taking to the water and enjoying time together boating, sailing, paddling, and fishing. During National Safe Boating Week, the U.S. Coast Guard and its federal, state, and local safe boating partners encourage all boaters to explore and enjoy America's beauty and waterways responsibly. Whereas safe boating begins with preparation, the Coast Guard estimates that human error accounts for most boating accidents and that life jackets could prevent nearly 86% of boating fatalities. Through basic boating safety procedures, carrying life-saving emergency distress and communication equipment, wearing life jackets, attending safe boating courses, participating in free boat safety checks, and staying sober when navigating, we can help assure boaters in America's coastal, inland, and offshore waters stay safe throughout the season. And whereas National Safe Boating Week is observed to bring attention to important life-saving tips for recreational boaters so that they can have a safer, more fun experience out on the water throughout the year. And whereas, on average, 650 people die each year in boating-related accidents in the U.S. 75% of these fatalities are caused by drowning. And whereas the vast majority of these accidents are caused by human error or poor judgment and not by the boat, equipment, or environmental factors. Whereas a significant number of boaters who lose their lives by drowning each year would be alive today had they worn their life jackets. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Morro Bay City Council does hereby support the goals of the Safe Boating Campaign and Proclamation May 20th to May 26th, 2023, as National Safe Boating Week and the start of year-round effort to promote safe boating and urge all those who boat to practice safe boating habits and wear life jackets at all times while boating. And with that, I will ask Mr. Carpenter to present the proclamation to our harbor director and harbor department staff.
Thank you, Mayor Whitsum and council members, for that proclamation. You know, Morro Bay is a waterfront community. Boating safety is so important to our community. You know, whether you're a 100-ton licensed captain or you're on a 10-foot kayak, you know, the goal is the same. We want you to have fun on the water, but we want you to return. And you mentioned the most important aspect of that, which can prevent most deaths on the water, and that is wearing your life jacket at all times. I want to recognize our Harbor Patrol. I've heard it more than once from several agencies that our community has one of the best Harbor Patrol units in the state, and I see it on a daily basis, and that's highly due to Becca Kelly and her leadership in that department and our officers like Charlie. So I want to thank them personally for what they do in the harbor every day. Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. We did host a safe boating day on our dock this last Sunday, the 21st. It was slightly overshadowed by the Ironman excitement. But we were able to give away some life jackets to a lot of youngsters that came by and had a little open house. Thank the Coast Guard Auxiliary for helping us out, and Sean Eladio with K-38 had her jet skis on display. Hopefully we'll see a lot more school groups come down, families throughout the summer that we can help educate and keep everyone safe. Get your California boater card. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one more for this evening, and this proclamation is declaring the week of May 21st to May 27th as Emergency Medical Services Week. Whereas emergency medical service is a vital public service, and whereas the members of the emergency medical services teams are ready to provide life-saving care to those in need 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and whereas access to quality emergency care dramatically improves the survival and recovery rate of those who experience sudden illness or injury, whereas emergency medical service has grown to fill a gap by providing important out-of-hospital care, including preventive medicine, follow-up care, and access to telemedicine, whereas the emergency medical services system consists of first responders, emergency medical technicians, paramedics, emergency medical dispatchers, firefighters, police officers, educators, administrators, pre-hospital nurses, emergency room nurses, emergency physicians, trained members of the public, and other out-of-hospital medical care providers. And whereas the members of emergency medical services teams whether career or volunteer, engage in thousands of hours of specialized training and continuing education to enhance their life-saving skills. And whereas it is important and appropriate to recognize the value of the accomplishments of emergency medical services providers by designating Emergency Medical Services Week, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Morro Bay City Council does hereby proclaim the week of May 21st through May 27th, 2023, as Emergency Medical Services Week with the theme EMS Week, where emergency care begins. And with that, I will have Mr. Carpenter present the proclamation to Chief McCrane and his staff.
Thank you, Mayor, Council, City staff, community members as well. In 1974, President Gerald Ford proclaimed the first EMS Week. That was done with the intention of honoring dedicated medical professionals that provide day-to-day life-saving care. Since that time, the American College of EMS Physicians, American College of Emergency Physicians, has continued that mission, working to advance emergency care and support this tradition. This year's theme, Where Emergency Care Begins, is designed to highlight the fact that EMS plays a vital role in emergency medicine and the continuation of patient care. Emergency medicine has developed into a true component of the medical profession and no longer just a transportation industry. And this highlights the fact that these men and women in this industry work to provide that high level of care day in and day out to the community. So I just wanted to thank Captain Travis Hosh, have firefighter Tanner Russell, and engineer Mike Hosey. And then not with us tonight, engineer Kevin Hames is being honored by the King David's Masonic Lodge as the firefighter of the year for them at a dinner tonight, or else he would be here with us. Just thank you for your support of the department, and thank you, gentlemen, for all that you do.
Thank you so much to our local harbor and fire services. We're very fortunate to have you all. With that, we're going to move to public comment, and I have some speaker slips to start out with. First up is Sharon O'Leary, followed by Aaron Oakes, please.
Mayor, City Council staff, I'm Sharon O'Leary and a volunteer over at the Community Resource Connections Office, which is a city service. So we're all fairly well informed about the county's strategic, five-year strategic plan to address homelessness. That's generally, our community's generally informed. Our office recently received the at-home, information about the at-home program, which came out of the California State Association of Counties, which gives a bit of an overview for what cities can do by way of organizing to address social issues. We recently, in the EBAC meetings, which are monthly, have invited as guest Jana Nichols from the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. We've had Susan Funk from the Atascadero, Mayor Pro Tem for Atascadero City Council. And this last month, we guested Wendy Lewis from the ECHO program. So we're looking for ways to collaborate. Each one of these leaders in those programs have offered to collaborate with us. At goal setting, we've proposed some solutions for the secure parking program for Morro Bay and a warming shelter. So I'm here tonight to ask if you would consider sending a rep over to the Atascadero City Council and perhaps to Paso and Five Cities to see what we can do by way of collaborating to address homelessness and the in-need community. Thank you.
Good evening, council members and staff. My name is Aaron Oakes of Morro Bay. Even though Captain America and the Hulk didn't show up to Iron Man last Saturday, the city of Morro Bay, the various departments, and the Morro Bay Chamber are the real superheroes of the event. I wanted to congratulate them for such a tremendous job. And I also wanted to thank the many volunteers in the community who stepped up and dedicated most of the day including council member Ford said she was there, you know, right when the sun was coming up. So there's a lot of people who were there throughout the whole entire day, making sure the event was safe and for not only the community, but for the athletes and for everybody. So there's a lot of moving parts, and what an excellent job for the inaugural Ironman in Morro Bay. So thank you. So this morning at 10 o'clock, I attended the Citizens for Estero Bay Preservation meeting at Buttercup Bakery, and it was a very informative meeting. They did talked about their initiative that they are launching to preserve our unique character of the Morro Bay waterfront. And I think they did a tremendous job in explaining very objectively, you know, how the initiative would work. And I encourage people to go to their website, which is just recently relaunched, preserveesterobay.com. And speaking of initiatives, I have an initiative of my own. So I launched a pilot program called Citizens Office Hours. And what Citizens Office Hours is essentially that residents can come meet with me and other citizens who do attend public meetings. This is for residents who are unable to show up at meetings or they're too busy in their lives to submit agenda correspondence and that sort of thing. And I got an overwhelming response to it. I put up the pilot program announcement on the social networking app Nextdoor. And when I woke up this morning, there was 122 RSVPs for the event. So I realized that I may be in over my head a little bit. So I encourage anyone who does come speak at public comment meeting, you know, during the city council meetings to sit down with me and listen to what residents have to say about the local issues. And so when we speak before public comment, that we have a more informed public opinion. So it's not just I have my opinions on X, Y, and Z. This is stuff that people are talking about. These are issues, and we gather consensus on there from the grassroots level. So I think that it's an incredible opportunity. More dates and times will be announced, but for more information, you can check it out on nextdoor.com and in the Morro Bay neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have two more speaker slips. Next up is Rachel Wilson, followed by Liz Winters, please.
Wow. Mayor Wixom and members of the City Council, my name is Rachel Wilson, and I'm from Cayucas. And I became involved last September because I happened to use your waterfront as my personal gym. I'm not sure. I think I calculated out I've been in your waterfront kayaking 750 times in the last 3 years. And I love the Ironman event, all of the outdoors, because that's really what Morro Bay is about, is getting people out and enjoying the wildlife. So last September, I heard that there was a meeting here planning for some Embarcadero changes. And so I came to the meeting and I thought, maybe this really isn't what Morro Bay is about. So a group of us formed Citizens for the Preservation of Estero Bay, and guess what? We discovered that Morro Bay had the best document ever, all 386 pages of Plan Morro Bay. From 2016 on, Morro Bay, if you could turn on, yeah. Morro Bay had the plan in place for what Morro Bay wanted to be, and it was outstanding. So what Citizens for the Preservation of Morro Bay are suggesting is to actually preserve the plan. And we're doing that through an initiative. Now, to give you an idea about initiatives in Morro Bay is number 8 in the United States in successful initiatives. Number 8. That means that we value what our voters believe. And so our initiative, go ahead and switch, is really simple. You got 7 pages, legal size pages, I believe it's double-sided, of a lot of information. But really what this initiative does is it preserves voters' choice. It's down to one little slide here. If you look at the land in the brown, and thank you, city, for putting this GIS together for us. If you look in the land in the brown, It is currently zoned visitor-serving commercial. That is Plan Morro Bay. That's thousands of hours of planning. And the land in green is zoned commercial recreational fishing. So here's what the plan does. It preserves the choice of our voters. Remember, we're great with initiatives. So here's the deal. The zoning in any of those parcels can be changed if a thoroughly vetted proposal is brought before the voters. So our initiative does not say that we can never change the zoning in any of those parcels, those four right there. It says, you know what? To change that zoning, it needs to be brought before our citizens. Because our great outdoors, this community is too fantastic to not have a definite plan for it. Thank you so much.
My right leg is totally asleep. Greetings. I am Linda Winters, 29-year resident in a mobile home park on Main Street, very close by the Main Street Highway 41 intersection. We've been discussing that a whole lot lately. I live a mere 300 paces from that intersection. And I was going to reread the speech that I gave at the PWEB meeting, and that's the Public Work Advisory Board meeting that was attended at the Morro Bay High School, which is really beautiful. It was a beautiful, beautiful meeting. Not as well attended as I hoped it would be, considering how many different opinions and objections I'd heard since the public forum meeting on May 10th. There were lots of pros and cons and that were voiced at that particular meeting. And I was really, really very concerned about the outcome of what was going to be decided. And what my concerns were are between the two meetings, as I heard a lot of what I think really doesn't matter, it's already been decided. And my response was, what kind of action did you take? And they said, well, nothing. My, you know, it's already been decided. And I said, well, it's kind of like complaining about who was elected. And then I say, well, who did you vote for? Well, I didn't vote. Well, guess what? Your opinion doesn't matter there, folks, because if you don't vote, you don't have any rights. My point to all of this is I am applauding the city staffers, the council folks, the fire and police for all their hard work for sorting out all these horrific traffic problems. You need to keep your opinions impartial and still be on the lookout for all of us residents that use the Main Street and 41 intersection, like me and all the all the residents that live in the mobile home parks on Main Street, 300 paces from that mess. Because when I leave my mobile home park, I have nowhere else to go but Main Street. I thank you for your time, and I will see you all right here on June 13th when this situation will be resolved. And if I have a few more seconds, I am also a participant in the Monday night dinners, which the food bank is very, very active in. And I got a thank you note just last night from one of the participants who always writes us notes, and he says, thank you for what you do. You make us better for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda, and I couldn't agree more. But that public comment is open for those of you who did not turn in speaker slips. Hello, Terry.
Good evening. Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. I was too lazy to fill out a speaker slip tonight. So just as a small point, I noticed that you skipped over the proclamation as A13 on your agenda. That may have been incidental or intentional. I'm not sure. Hopefully it will be approved in the balance of the consent agenda. I just wanted to add my voice to the chorus that is proclaiming what a success Iron Man was, and particularly the amazing ability of our very small but very resourceful local police and public services departments to be able to put this together. I was a longtime resident in San Luis Obispo, which is no stranger to major events of all kinds, Poly Royal being the least of them, no longer going on. But it's amazing to me that we were able to successfully and more or less uneventfully host such a wonderfully large event. And having said that, my wife and I eat out every night, and so we didn't want to get caught up in the congestion in our regular restaurant tours, so we drove to Cambria for dinner that night and were amazed to see the extent to which the public services people had done coning and other things all the way up Highway 1 for the event. And it just shows the scale of the outreach that was necessary to make this event happen. One other personal note, based on erroneous information, I could say that my wife told me, but I won't. I showed up trying to get across the jogging strip or at an inappropriate time, apparently. And I must say that the officers that were manning the control stations were extremely cordial, polite, but very firm in not letting me cross the line in my vehicle. And hopefully I'll be able to help the police department refine the route and some of the ways in which people can get to businesses and or locations during the event. I'm sure emergency services would be able to, but on the whole, I must say it's just an amazing event to pull off for such a small town. And kudos once again to our chief, because she caught the ball and ran with it, and I think it was just spectacular. In hindsight, and because we eat out every night, I've been talking to a lot of the restaurants that we didn't go to during Iron Man, and the general consensus seems to be they were very disappointed, and I just wanted to pass that word along. They were not beneficiaries of the city's efforts to enhance public business. So hopefully that'll be noted, and we'll figure out a better way to deal with that the next round. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Wickstrom, council members, Shirley Frazier, resident of Morro Bay. I volunteered all 3 days for the Iron Man, and I saw Council Member Ford and Barton, out at the bike area that I was assigned to on Saturday. And I also wanted to commend Chief Watkins for all of her outstanding organization and all of the other city agencies for their support in making this an outstanding inaugural event. I worked with the athletes on Thursday and Friday with registration in the information booth, so I heard firsthand from them how many of them, numerous ones, and their families told me how beautiful they thought Morro Bay was. They've been by it before on the highway but hadn't stopped. They appreciated not only the beauty but the peacefulness, the tranquility, and the small-town charm that they saw here. They also loved that it was very centrally located in the state of California, and everybody that I talked to, in addition to other volunteers that talked to me, said they will definitely be back 100% for visits and vacations here. We also directed a lot of athletes. Many of them stayed at the hotels here in town and other communities all the way up and down the coast from Cambria down as far as I heard of some in Grover Beach. So I know that it was good for all of them down here. I know a lot of people frequented the restaurants because they wanted to walk places and not have to move their cars. I do know that some residents mentioned the traffic. I feel like the police and the volunteers did an outstanding job. I'm somebody who lives right here in the neighborhood, so I was directly impacted. And you know what? I remember when we used to have the Harbor Festival here 20, 25 years ago. You know, you remember it, obviously. Lots of road closures, lots of people. You know, it was a wonderful thing for the city. This was a wonderful thing for the city. For people that are not familiar with triathlons, it's a big deal to host an Ironman. 70.3 people come from all over, as we've already talked about, not only the state, but the United States. And as far as delays, I commend Chief Watkins. I agree. I've sat out there coming from Cayucas from the fireworks for, you know, an hour in gridlock or more. This was an 8.5-hour event. Things closed a little bit before that, but you know what? It was a day or less of inconvenience to the residents for such a positive stamp on the city, and I believe it's something economically now and in the future. I know we have 2 years worth of contract left, but I just want you to support this. I think there was a lot more good than just the one day of inconvenience to some of the people, and the athletes really commented to us about it. So, again, kudos to everyone involved and the city. It was a fantastic event in general, but especially for the inaugural. So thank you for your support of this.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council. My name is Erica Crawford. I'm with the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. I am going to throw out more kudos for Ironman, not only for this. I know, I just have to. But I'm really going to focus on Visit Morro Bay. It is so refreshing to work with a partner who is so collaborative and holistic and giving. That organization brought in an outside social media sort of maven in Samantha Pruitt, and they were asking us which businesses to go to. They were asking us for guidance. They were sharing collateral and reels that they were making for us to reshare. That partnership is really healthy. So I'm very happy to be working with Visit Morro Bay, and I think they did an amazing job, and you did as well, Chief Watkins and the whole city team. Really, I'm here just to kind of give some updates from the chamber. Our quarter two theme is gearing up for the busy season. That's sort of what we're focusing all of our programming and messaging on. So tomorrow we have a breakfast on the bay. We've partnered with Mission Community Services Corporation and the Women's Business Center to do a small business marketing workshop. We focus on our existing businesses. We want our existing businesses to, you know, we want to retain them, we want to expand them, we want to know what they need, and we want to give them tools that they can use to be successful in our community. So we're doing that breakfast tomorrow, and then in the early part of June, we're going to do our listening tour. Maybe it's the second annual. If it goes well, we'll keep it going. I think it's a good idea. We go to each of our four economic centers to where the businesses do business every day, and we talk to them about what it's like to do business there. We want to know about their economic realities that they're facing in 2023 so that we can learn from them what we can do to actively support the sales tax and TOT-generating businesses in our community. So we'll do the listening tour June 1st through June 12th. The dates will be on Morro Bay Life page 3, and we're going to start sending those out. And we have a survey also ready to go live tomorrow, so we'll be sharing that out as well, geared more toward business owner-operators and senior-level managers. Thank you.
Good evening, Betty Winholtz. I want to focus on June 13th when the five of you will be making a decision for the 10,000 of us regarding the intersection of 41, 1 in Main. And I've seen you at the workshop a couple of weeks ago and at PWAB last week. However, I think to complete your due diligence, you need to show up at the corner of 41 and Main. You need to be there for 30 to 60 minutes. You need to feel what it's like. You need to sense what it's like. You need to hear what it's like, whether that's at lunchtime or not, because if they're closing the campus, that section may or may not matter. But other hours of the day, other days of the week. But unless you're there, unless you understand visually what's going on, I don't know how you can make a really informed decision. So I encourage you over the next few weeks to plant yourself there for anywhere from an hour or more. Thank you.
Hello, Mayor, City Council, Nicole Dorfman. I also want to say thank you and congratulate everybody for a wonderful Ironman event. And these sorts of events, this event really plays to our strength, our beauty, our harbor, our quiet town. It's healthy. It was perfect cloud cover. I spoke to a few athletes. They loved it. We had some folks in from San Diego, four members of a family, to support one of the athletes. You know, it's a young man and his fiancée, and they were at our house saying, how can we live here? You know, they were just so enthralled. So it was beautiful to bring them here. I also want to mention one group that hasn't been mentioned yet, the Grizzly Academy. They were here volunteering. I was at the station. And the group that was I was volunteering with, there was, I want to say, 10, 15 young women. The Grizzly Academy, for those who don't know, serves troubled youth between, I think, 15 and a half and to 18. And it was so wonderful working with these young people who were just, you know, go, go. They were really cheering everybody on, so inspirational. And also some of them are saying, how long is it? How long is the bike, the race? Is how old do you have to be to get into it? You know, I want to do this. And I said, great, come back next year. So that was really warmed my heart to see these troubled youth really lighting up for something and also being able to encourage other people as they were, you know, running past. And I hope it pencils out, because I know the city is looking for more sources of revenue. And again, this plays to our strength, and I hope we can do more of this. It was a tremendous undertaking, and so many people were mentioned. So it was noticed, and we really appreciate it. Another thing I want to say, I really appreciate the transparency. Council Member Landrum, Mayor Wixom, thank you very much for sharing with us what you learned in Sacramento, what you're continuing to learn about the wind farm and how it might impact our town, about the battery plan. It's really refreshing, and I think it's so important, and it really creates a healthy, engaged community. So thank you for all your hard work.
Hello, everyone. I'm Margaret Carmen. I'm sorry I missed the Ironman. I was working when I should have been working on all those athletes and offered my services. But anyway, next year, I'd like to talk about the meetings that we've had with the traffic circle versus the traffic light. And I totally agree with Betty. Got to go watch what's happening. And I really just want to say I don't feel like I got a very good description of why they're so against the traffic light. It was just like, that's the way it is. So there's one question I'd like you to ask when you 2 weeks from now when they're here. They keep saying that the traffic light will cost more because it has to have upkeep. And nobody talked about what is that upkeep and how much money will that cost. So you can say $12 million versus $4 million. So that was a really big question I had. And I just want to say I'm representing a lot of people who want to have the traffic light instead of the circle. And I'd like to report that last week I was at the Board of Supervisors meeting where they were deciding to give the REACH project $400,000. And I just want to remind you guys that that is an economic development, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we have to always consider that they're not long-lasting jobs and that there's not a lot in all the hundreds of pages from the REACH report for 2 years where they're caring about our environment and our way of life and what, like, all the athletes wanted when they came here and everything. So it was really hard to listen to them last week, and I can't wait until you guys get to okay, I always get this way. I lose my train of thought. Anyway, thank you for all that you do, and I was so glad to see you guys at that meeting last week, you know, getting all your information so you can have the vote that we want.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? AGP, do we have anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Mayor. Currently, I see Judy Lynn Setting. I'm going to go ahead and unmute Judy Lynn. Judy Lynn, you should be unmuted.
Good evening. I just want to say thank you to everybody who made the Ironman a success here in Morro Bay, and I'm looking forward to the next 2 years when they're here. It was an awesome event. I would like to talk about the roundabout also. I was at the meeting And I was very disappointed in the fact that the presentation, as wonderful as it was very one-sided towards the roundabout. And it was clear to me that a decision was already made. And the majority of the people who spoke were not in favor of the roundabout. And they had very, very good reasons. And there were two high school young ladies present who both spoke very eloquently. And one of them gave a little rendition of herself as a driver in a roundabout. She was very candid, very honest, and it reminded me of probably myself back when I was 17. And we're in a hurry to get back to class, get lunch, get back to class, socialize. We're driving in a roundabout and we see yield, but we're in a hurry. So we scoot on through. We scoot on past that yield and don't really pay attention. And a roundabout lets us keep going without stopping. So we're just going to try to keep going. And I feel that roundabouts are wonderful, but there are certain locations that are not ideal for them. And those are locations that incorporate a lot of pedestrian traffic. And we definitely are going to have that at this location. We don't really have a whole lot of pedestrian traffic at our Morro Bay Boulevard and Quintana roundabout. And the other factor that is very disheartening is the $12 million price tag. It's a fact. That's how much it is. We don't know yet if it includes the amount of money we'll have to spend on eminent domains, easements for, you know, to make it, get the property we need to make it, to install it. But it is going to be $8 million more than installing traffic lights, and it's going to take a lot longer. So I feel like we're at a place where we need an immediate solution, something that can be accomplished pretty quickly. And traffic lights just seem to be a good way. And I was just very, very saddened that the board didn't listen to the public. It's really hard to watch that happen. So anyway, I hope you guys will listen to the public when it comes before you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, AGP. Is there anyone else in the queue?
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. Currently, I do not see any raised hands left in the queue.
Thank you very much. With that, I will bring it back and close public comment. Terry, real quick shout out. That proclamation for Pride Month was already handed out by Councilmember Barton this week, so we did not overlook it. Thank you. And Nicole, thank you for mentioning the Grizzly Academy. They had a huge presence there, and I'm sorry that we didn't recognize them. And I will give them a shout out. They have a huge event coming up on Saturday, June 24th. So you can go to their website and get information about that. And I think there'll be an opportunity for a lot of our community to go out and support them. So thank you. With that, we will move on to the consent agenda. I will open public comment to items on the consent agenda, please.
Good evening again, Betty Winholtz. Just want to refer to, I think it's number four, regarding the 3 years that you're going to continue to be, make another contract with the county for 3 years regarding our allocations for the CBDG grants, loans, however that money comes to us. And I raised my concerns in my email to the City Council regarding whether Morro Bay residents are getting the benefit of that as we're partnering with the county and other cities, or if, like Grover, we should separate ourselves out so we can get a better benefit. Certainly staff has its opinion, and you should have your opinion, and I look forward to hearing your opinion about that as you make this decision. I personally feel like we could do better if we separated out and we applied for grants separately. And at the least, When those grants do come to us, then the people have input to that if you're going to stay with the same kind of cycle that you're in, that it's not always made, pre-made, I might say, by staff, but that we get to help say what that's about. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment on the consent agenda? AGP, do we have anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. Does anyone have a desire to pull any items on the consent agenda this evening? Seeing,
I'd like to pull A13, please.
A13?
Yes.
With that, I will ask for a motion on the consent agenda to approve all items other than A13.
I'll move that we approve all the other items except for A13.
And a second?
I'll second it.
And we can do a roll call vote. Thank you.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Landrum?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. And with that, I will turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Ford, A13.
Thank you, Mayor. I thank you for clarifying why the proclamation declaring June 2023 as Pride Month, why it was not read here tonight. And I just wanted to, I was present when Council Member Barton read the proclamation and presented it in front of Gala Pride and Diversity Center's rally in San Luis Obispo. And I thought it was just a great moment for Morro Bay to represent there and to show our support, and I'm looking forward to the flag being raised at City Hall in June. I just wanted to say that. And I don't know if Councilmember Barton had anything to add, but I just wanted to say that.
It was a most moving event. So many people spoke about their lives as a person of a trans person, all different ways that you could be affected, and it really was a touching presentation, and I'm so glad that I went and that we went together. So that's it.
Thank you. And with that, I will ask for a motion.
I move that we approve item A13.
A second.
I second.
And I'll just do a voice vote, if that's okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. And with that, we have two business items on the agenda this evening. So I think maybe that we'll take advantage real quickly before we get into those two items. Take a 5-minute break. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. We appreciate you taking a few minutes so we could take a break. We'll move on to item C1, and I believe at this time for our business item, I will turn it over to our city manager, Mr. Carpenter. Thank you.
Mayor, we're going to have Rachel Hendricks, our human resources manager, present this item.
Good evening. Rachel Hendricks, human resources manager. Today's agenda's item is regarding CalPERS employee cost sharing. Cost sharing, as it refers to CalPERS, is when employees contribute a portion of their salary toward the employer's, which is the city's, cost of CalPERS. Tonight's item is step number 2 in the process to introduce cost sharing of the city's CalPERS employer contribution with city employees in the SEIU, which is the Service Employees International Union, and our unrepresented confidential, unrepresented management, and unrepresented department heads group. Step 1 was brought to Council as a consent agenda item on April 25th, 2023, which adopted resolutions evidencing unrepresented employees' agreements with the cost-sharing agreement, which CalPERS requires before moving forward with a contract amendment. The CalPERS contract amendment will bring the contract in line with the current adopted memorandums of understanding, the MOUs, and compensation and benefits resolutions, which were approved in 2022 with a 4% COLA in July 1st of 2023 in exchange for contributing to a portion of the city's contribution of CalPERS. Staff is recommending Council take 3 actions this evening. 1, adopt resolution number 32-23, indicating the city's intention to approve an amendment to the contract with CalPERS, the agency managing pension and health benefits for public employees in California. And number 2, introduce ordinance number 658 for the first reading, which authorizes an amendment to the CalPERS contract to implement section 20516, which references cost sharing for local members in specific employee unions and unrepresented positions. And number 3, allow the mayor, city manager, city clerk, or their designee as authorized to execute necessary CalPERS forms to facilitate the contract amendment process. If these actions are approved tonight, city staff will conduct a secret ballot vote from affected employees to approve the cost-sharing agreement. If the majority of employees vote to approve, staff will bring back Ordinance 658 for adoption at the June 13th regular City Council meeting as step number 3. And I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Rachel. With that, I will look to my right for council questions.
I don't have any right now, thank you.
And to my left, council members.
I don't have any questions at this time.
No questions.
Good.
With that, I will open public comment on item C1. Please don't go away.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Conspicuously absent from staff's presentation was what happens if SEIU membership does not approve your motion. I think that would be a question perhaps your, whatever she is, I'm sorry, human resource manager has planned for the possibility that your employees union won't approve that. There are other retirement systems that other jurisdictions are moving towards. I think CalPERS is probably doing better than they have in the past in terms of rates of returns, but the stock market is purged for a major repositioning, and I don't know how their funds are set up. So I appreciate that the employees would be even willing to change their traditional contract, and I would hope that they would follow suit with lots of employees in other jurisdictions that have seen the wisdom to participate in their own retirement program. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? AGP, do we have anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Thank you very much. With that, I'll close public comment and bring it back. Did you want to respond?
Yes, so I can answer that question. So the MOU with the SEIU is written in such a way, I don't have it in front of me right now, but it's written in such a way that they will not get their cost of living adjustment if they do not agree to this. So the cost sharing.
Thank you. Do we have any questions or comments? Are we ready to move into comments, or do we have questions for Rachel? Anyone? I see no questions. Any comments? No comments.
Yes, I'd like to thank Rachel, our human resources manager. I want to thank you so much for your work on this, and I'm really excited to have you on board. You've just really done an amazing job since you've been here, and this report is pretty comprehensive. It's pretty easy to understand. I think that's probably why we're questionless, not because, you know, because we don't know what questions to ask, but I think because there weren't any, well, with the exception of Terry, there wasn't any other questions left to ask. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I would echo that. Thank you to you and your staff and the staff at City Hall for working on this. We appreciate it, and we did see it when it came before us last month. And with that, if there's no questions or comments, I will entertain a motion. Yes, that's why I'm asking someone else.
So I'll make a motion here that we recommend the City Council take the following separate actions. Adopt, number one, adopt resolution number 32-23. Giving notice of the city's intention to approve an amendment to the contract between the City of Morro Bay and the California Public Employees Retirement System, known as CalPERS, Board of Administration. And number two, introduced for first reading by title only, with further reading waived, ordinance number 658, authorizing an amendment to the contract between the City of Morro Bay and the Board of Administration of the California Public Employees Retirement System, CalPERS, implementing section 20516, employee sharing additional cost for local members in the Service Employees International Union, known as SEIU, and unrepresented management, unrepresented department heads, and number three, authorize the mayor, city manager, city clerk, or their designees to execute CalPERS forms as required to facilitate the CalPERS contract amendment process.
Thank you, Councilmember Edwards. I'll take a second on that.
I second that.
Thank you, Councilmember Landrum. And for this, we'll ask for a roll call vote from the city clerk, please.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Landrum?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you very much again. We appreciate it. And with that, we will move into item C2, budget study session review of fiscal year 23-24 draft proposed budget. And this is going to be two parts tonight and then tomorrow. And with that, I will turn it over, Mr. Carpenter.
Mayor, members of council, staff is very pleased to present tonight the proposed operating budget. As you mentioned, tomorrow night we'll be focused on the capital improvement projects budget. The draft budget really represents the work of a lot of people, the community as far as their participation in strategic planning, the council through strategic planning and tonight, and also a number of our city staff members, the executive team, and their administrative staff. In preparation for this year's budget, we really saw that revenues were flattening. So the department heads were instructed to prepare essentially a status quo budget based on the resources that they had available to them last year. So that's where that was our starting point. Our next step was to listen to what we heard through the strategic planning process, and then based on what we heard, to allocate whatever remaining resources were available to address the strategic planning goals presented through that process and agreed upon by the City Council. So just to remind you of our strategic planning goals, there were four: focus on public infrastructure, economic vitality, response to housing and homelessness response, and finally community engagement. And throughout the operating budget tonight and the capital improvement budget that you'll see tomorrow night, we allocated remaining revenue resources to address some of the action items that were associated with these goals. So you'll see, for example, a recommendation that funds be enhanced and put towards street improvements, sidewalk repairs, storm damage repairs, grant writing assistance, and community engagement assistance were items. There are a number of other action items that aren't budget-related, but those are the budget-related action items that are addressed in the proposed budget. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to our Assistant City Manager and Finance Director, Sarah Johnson-Rios. She's going to walk you through the operating budget. There are about 30 slides. We're going to ask you to hold your questions to the end, and we'll try to address them all once we get to the end of the PowerPoint. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Good evening, Mayor, Council, and members of the public. Before I jump in, I want to thank Kelly Mattis, who's here to answer any questions as well. She's our senior administrative services analyst who plays a lead role in developing the budget. I have to basically give the group a heads up that this will be her last year developing a budget for us. She will be moving on to her next adventure, and so I especially wanted to take a moment to thank her this evening. She's helped us put together two budgets now, this year and last year, and her work has been invaluable, so thank you. And thank you as well to the department head team and other staff, including Janine here from Public Works, who also are very huge contributors to the budget, especially with the Public Works complexities. So with that, just a reminder of what's on the screen is the budget timeline. This is a discussion that starts each year in February with the mid-year update and sort of a high-level fiscal update to Council and to CFAC. And then we jump in the spring to the Council goal-setting sessions, of which there were several discussions. And then the budget goes to CFAC, which we'll talk more about later. That's the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. And Council actually invites their input on both the Measure Q&E budget and the citywide budget. This is the first year in recent years that we've had an opportunity to take them the full budget, and so that's of note. And then, of course, we're here today and tomorrow with the budget study sessions, and then the final step in the process is budget adoption, which will be on June 13th. So what we're looking for tonight and tomorrow night from Council is any input on the budget, any changes that you may want to see to the proposed budget. We would like to know those now and to incorporate those and bring those back for adoption if there are changes on June 13th. And we are required under state law to approve a budget before July 1st. And just for the public that's listening, the city's on a fiscal year July 1 through June 30th budget. So this budget, we're talking about the period starting July 1st of 2023. So big picture, the citywide proposed budget this year is $56.1 million in expenditures. And when we talk about this, we talk of the numbers excluding transfers between funds. And just real quickly, I mean, that basically means that any cash that's transferred from, for example, the water operating fund to the water capital fund, we exclude that from this total number, so we're not double counting anything. But Council does approve the budget by fund, and so since we have separate funds for operating and capital, that's where you get those transfers. At the end of the day, the dollars that will go out the door is this $56.1 million. That represents a 3.5% increase from the current fiscal year 22-23 budget. And we have roughly the same size capital program at about $19.5 million proposed this year, and then the remainder of $56 million is comprised of $36.6 million for our operations, which is all of the day-to-day services that the city provides and all of our ongoing programs. It's notable for the city to have such a sizable capital program, and we're going to talk more about that tomorrow. That's why we're carving out time for that relative to the size of the total budget. Revenue budget proposed this year is $45.9 million, and that's a decrease of 1%. There's lots of ups and downs in there, but you could really attribute that 1% to no more additional federal funding for COVID relief. That was one-time money that we will not be receiving anymore. And so the difference between revenues and expenditures, you can see that expenditures are higher than revenues, is not indicative of an operating deficit. It means we're taking cash available from fund balance and spending it on one-time capital projects. So that's largely in the Water and Sewer Fund, but also in the General Fund and the Measure Q and E Fund based on one-time operating surpluses that we're able to then allocate for capital. So big picture, and these charts are all in the proposed budget, which is online, and there's a link on our the city's homepage. So in terms of where the city gets its money from, this chart shows the largest share here, the green slice of the pie. Almost half of our revenues come from current services, and that includes things that individuals pay for as a service. So water rates, sewer rates, recreation programming fees, lease revenues in the Harbor Fund, planning fees, et cetera. And then the next largest share is represented by a combination of that blue and gold and orange slice of the pie, which is our tax revenue. So property taxes, sales and use taxes, and transient occupancy taxes represent over a quarter of the citywide budget. And then the other, there's a number of other smaller sources. We also can show revenues by fund, which is a different way to view the same information. The general fund captures almost half of the citywide revenue, and then the water and sewer operating funds capture the next largest share. And, of course, those funds are restricted to be used only for water and sewer services and related capital improvements. And then the Measure Q&E Fund, I wanted to note, that's the red slice of the pie. That represents an increasing share of citywide revenues after the passage of Measure E in 2020. It's at almost 9% of citywide revenues this year. And then the expenditure chart is very similar to this. The general fund and operating and sewer funds, as well as Q&E represent the lion's share of our expenditures. The city has actually over 40 funds. Most of them are small funds that are restricted as to use. And just five of those funds account for 90% of our financial activity. So we'll spend time talking about those five funds tonight. That's the general fund, water, sewer, harbor, and Q&E. Looking at expenditures in a different way is this shows expenditures by department across all funds. So because we're including water and sewer, the Public Works Department represents the largest share of the citywide budget, and then police and fire represent the next largest shares. If we were just to look at the general fund and even the Measure Q&E fund, police and fire would represent a much larger portion. I think it's roughly half. And I'm going to take a few minutes to talk about personnel and propose personnel changes. I just want to note, so I know these details might be difficult to view on screen, but the total that is showing in the right-hand column there is 107.5 full-time employees. And so, you know, the city is a full-service city that provides police services, fire services, has a harbor department, all of the public works services and community development services, as well as the administration, with 107.5 full-time employees. And there's not a significant change proposed this year. The change represents a net addition of 2.4 full-time employees. That actually includes one position that was just approved very late in 22-23, the Harbor Patrol Officer. So that's a change from last year's adopted budget, as well as one newly proposed full-time firefighter position, which is proposed to be offset by the reduction of three part-time reserve firefighters, which you'll see on the next slide. And that really is indicative of increasing challenges in recruiting reserve firefighters, but a need to maintain minimum staffing levels. And then the other full-time position that is included in the proposed budget is a senior civil engineer to really help deliver the robust proposed capital program. That position is proposed to be shared across four funds based on the estimated time allocation of that position. And that's something that, if approved, would be reviewed annually in terms of that person's work plan and cost distribution. And then we have part-time staff that this is presented as FTE equivalents. So this is showing that we have what would be equivalent to about 30 full-time positions, but this is really more bodies that work a much smaller number of hours throughout the year. The most significant changes here are the reflection of the addition of the half-time homeless outreach coordinator. That's a change already from last year's adopted budget, and then a proposed half-time police reserve officer, which is a relatively lower-cost way to help the police department maintain adequate staffing coverage. And then there are some smaller changes in other departments to part-time staffing proposed. Perhaps a larger scale personnel item that we want to note in the proposed budget and as it impacts the five-year forecasts is our ongoing challenge with the city's, like most cities in California, the city's growing unfunded accrued liability for PERS. PERS did have one good year of market returns that gave many cities, including Morro Bay, hope that our minimum payments would be declining or at least flattening, and that's what you see in the blue bars going across this chart here. Unfortunately, PERS lost money after that high year of gains and is projected to only gain 3-point-something% this year. So those two bad years are more than undoing the one good year, essentially, and we're projecting very rapidly increasing required minimum payments to PERS, as you can see by the slope of this chart, over the next several years. We are taking, and Council has taken, very proactive steps to continue to address that. This proposed budget proposes another $1.1 million to be allocated to a pension trust to continue to prepare the city for those years of higher payment, and that's consistent with the council pension reserve policy that was adopted last year. It basically says that one-third of the prior year's general fund surplus will get put into a pension trust fund that can only be spent on pension-related costs. This slide I want to note is new from the packet. It's the only change to the slide deck that was published. And it just shows some potential what we call smoothing scenarios to try to take that top off the curve of increasing payments. And so there's a few scenarios here. One is basically if we were to only contribute this $1.1 million this year to the pension trust fund, that would help us smooth things out a little bit. It would result in an annual minimum payment of about $3.4 million going forward. And again, these are moving targets, so this you can view this as a high-level forecast. If we were to be able to conceptually contribute more into the Section 115 trust in the next few years, then we could achieve basically more smoothing and get our annual payment down to a projected $3.2 million over the subsequent years. And so you end up saving more money in the long run by putting money away now. And, of course, it's invested and hopefully will earn returns in the meantime. So we can go into more detail about that concept at a future meeting if you're interested, but we are actively tracking that and planning ahead for that. And then we'll dive into the capital improvement plan and budget more tomorrow night, but big picture, the proposed budget includes an investment of $19.5 million in 31 capital improvement projects. The lion's share of that is in water and sewer infrastructure, as well as general fund and Measure Q&E fund proposed contributions to pavement management in line with council's infrastructure goal and storm recovery. So storm recovery is taking a bit of a chunk out of what we could otherwise do for our capital improvement list. There's $1.9 million proposed for storm recovery, and there have been questions about whether we're budgeting for reimbursements. We're not budgeting in 23-24 for reimbursements because we don't yet know what we will receive or when we will receive it, and it may take more than 1 year to receive. So anything that's received as a reimbursement would just be credited to the fund balance that expended those funds and be available for council to program in a future year budget. The multi-year CIP plan, I'll just mention it briefly tonight because it will feed into our forecast discussion. It basically presents a five-year snapshot, a snapshot in time of what we know today about five-year CIP expenditures. And I'm sure Mr. Qualick will describe tomorrow, this will be evolving over time as the capital needs assessments are completed and we learn more about our capital needs and costs. So these will certainly change in the future, but they're relevant because they feed right into our five-year forecast that you'll be seeing tonight. And before I jump into those forecasts that take us into the next 5 years, I do want to spend a few moments talking about CFAC's input. And first, I just want to thank CFAC for their time in reviewing the budget. It's, as you know, a robust document, and I really applaud their efforts to spend time getting into the details and reviewing that and providing input for us. We also, I wanted to note, have all five seats on CFAC filled, as you know, and so we did have all members present for this discussion, which was great. Three of those members, it was their first meeting, and so again, I appreciate their diving into this lengthy agenda item on their first meeting. And I will just provide a little bit of background for your discussion tonight. They primarily provided input on the Measure Q&E fund budget, and that was the motion that they passed. They had some individual comments that are in your staff report about the citywide budget, but we're going to focus tonight on the motion that they took on the Q&E fund budget. And so as a reminder, the council priorities that guide our expenditure of Measure Q&E funds, there are four of them. They were adopted in 2021 after a process with CFAC and the council, looking at the ballot measure language in 2006 and in 2020 and trying to summarize that in these four priorities. So they're to maintain public safety services, and there's a list of what that looks like, to maintain or enhance cleanliness and safety of public spaces, also a list of what that looks like, and investing in infrastructure and equipment, such as street paving, storm drains, and vehicle replacements, and finally ensuring the financial health of the city by maintaining appropriate reserves. So this year, the proposed budget includes $4.6 million in revenues, and that represents a leveling off projected of sales tax. I'll talk a bit more about revenue assumptions when we get to our citywide forecasts. And then $5.7 million in expenditures. And so, again, that delta there is coming from expenditure of fund balance that we received in prior years. So there are some changes to the ongoing operating costs proposed in Q&E. You can see those listed here. The most significant change in terms of percentage change is addition of public works-related budget to allocate on-call dollars for smaller-scale pavement management, sidewalk repair, and storm drain repair. And then we have proposed $2.3 million in capital expenditures. We'll talk about each of these projects in more detail tomorrow, but I'll mention them tonight so that we can go through CFAC's input on them. They are the active transportation plan, which will help make the city more competitive or eligible for grant funding, the local road safety plan implementation and safety improvements, which will make crosswalk and pedestrian-related improvements and related improvements to local road safety, the replacement of trash and recycling, trash cans and recycling cans, sidewalk improvements and street tree replacements, which is what it sounds like to repair areas of sidewalk that are impacted by tree roots, typically. And then finally, the most sizable proposal is $1.8 million towards the annual pavement management program. And that would be a $2.1 million total project budget. The delta there is coming from state gas tax funds. So that's what's in your proposed budget. The recommendation from CFAC recommended some changes. They recommended removing $1.3 million from the total proposed budget of $5.7 million. Specifically, they recommended funding a proposed Harbor Patrol response vehicle out of the Harbor Fund instead of Measure Q&E. That patrol vehicle is to replace a vehicle that's exceeded its useful life and is consistent with the four council priorities for Q&E. But, you know, it certainly could be funded out of the Harbor Fund balance instead, and that was the CFAC's recommendation. And then they recommended eliminating three proposed CIPs, the Active Transportation Plan, the Local Road Safety Plan, Implementation and Safety Improvements, and Sidewalk Improvements from the proposed budget. And they recommended finally reducing the pavement management program down to $1 million, so a reduction of $840,000. You know, I think the concerns that they raised were really to make sure that we're preserving enough of Measure Q&E to retain the staff that we have and to adequately compensate the staff that we have to ensure that we can maintain the level of operating budget that's desired in the fund, even as we're projecting revenues to fall off. And so what they were essentially recommending was that $1.3 million that would be withheld from expenditure this year would just be retained in fund balance and presumably allocated in future years. So we did want to share with council the anticipated impacts of removing these items from the budget. And so that's what's represented on this slide and also in the staff report. You know, basically, we would either have to find alternative funding sources for these items, which in some cases would require less funding for other items, or we would have to forego this work. And so the impacts would be, you know, potential impacts on the Harbor Fund's response, depending on how long we try to keep that vehicle that's past its useful life. Potential impacts to the city's eligibility for grants if they're requiring this ATP plan. And then less public safety improvements that we would be able to make both in the areas of this local road safety plan and sidewalk improvements. And finally, it would roughly cut the proposed annual pavement management program in half. And so I know I'll leave it at that, and our public works team, I'm sure, can give you more specifics if you're interested. And so some things to consider, and again, these are raised in your staff report. So, you know, I think CFAC raised some valid concerns, and looking at overall, our forecast is that our expenditures are growing at a faster rate than our revenues are growing. And so in the five-year period, we're showing basically less funding available for capital. The Measure Q&E fund is projected to still maintain an operating surplus over the five-year period, a balanced operating budget at the current level of services, but it would have a declining amount of funds available for capital. It is important to note that you do have a reserve policy. Council has the General Fund Emergency Reserve Policy that calculates, it's basically a minimum reserve of 33% and a maximum or a target reserve of 50%, calculated based on those percentages of the operating budget and the general fund and the Measure Q&E fund. So using this year as an example, the proposed Measure Q&E budget operating budget is $3.4 million. The proposed budget already includes 33% of that, or about $1.1 million, in the general fund emergency reserve. So you're already retaining essentially one-third of the operating budget in Q&E in that general fund emergency reserve. Retaining additional fund balance in the Q&E fund would be on top of that. So I just want to make sure that point comes across clearly. And so, you know, typically the approach to the proposed budget is to ensure that in all funds, we're meeting council's reserve policies at least the minimum, and then we're deploying all of the funds above and beyond that, because we don't typically want to retain more funds than are in our policy guidance. And then another thing to consider is that we've intentionally left sort of a cushion in the Measure Q&E fund for capital, because it is a volatile revenue source. Sales tax revenue will ebb and flow with the business cycle. And so we don't recommend programming 100% of it for operating in case we have a year where sales tax revenue falls off. And so that's what's been nice about the ability to have a portion of it that's operating and a portion that's capital. The capital portion can sort of ebb and flow from year to year as resources are available. And then finally, just, you know, the proposed budget, the baseline proposed budget, is trying to be responsive to the Public Infrastructure Council goal. And so that's where these capital projects would align in your strategic plan. And then the final section of the presentation for tonight is looking ahead. So snapshot at a high level covers the high points of the operating budget. And then looking ahead, we're going to look at our five major funds. And each year, you don't have to read these, I'll talk about the important ones. Each year, we update our forecast assumptions. And so on the revenue side, I want to highlight for you property tax, sales tax, and transient occupancy tax, as well as other revenues. We are generally projecting that revenues overall in these major sources are going to grow between 2 to 4% in the five-year forecast period. This is more of a return to baseline levels of growth than we've seen in recent years. The city has been really fortunate to have a couple of really good years in the post-pandemic era, and our sales tax growth has been in the double digits. Our TOT growth has been in the double digits. That's not what we're seeing in recent quarters, and that's not what is projected for 23-24. So revenues, big picture, are leveling off. Expenditure, that doesn't mean growth will be zero. It just means growth is slowing down, which is going to feel like a reduction, even though we're still growing at more of a baseline level. On the expenditure side, we're still dealing with inflation, like many of us are, and you know, in our day-to-day expenditures as well. And so those are impacting the city. They're making it more expensive to continue to deliver the same level of services. And so, you know, when you have a dynamic where your expenditure growth is outpacing your revenue growth, of course, that's going to create challenges in the out years. And so I'll go through what that means for each fund. The largest number here on the expenditure growth side is that CalPERS number, which correlates to the chart that I showed you before. And that's based on calculations from CalPERS's Pension Outlook tool. They have a good tool that allows cities to help project what that growth rate is going to be. So for the general fund, what you're seeing here is the yellow revenue bars are either kind of just trying to keep pace with the green expenditure bars and not always being able to keep pace in the out years. And so you're seeing the use of one-time available fund balance in that little brown bar this year for funding the general fund emergency reserve, funding capital. And then in the out years, you're seeing that dotted line being a negative fund balance. What that really reflects is the general fund's lack of ability to fund capital projects in the out years. And so this builds in those five-year capital plan assumptions. The fund is projected to maintain an operating surplus for the next 3 years, and there's a detailed table that's in the actual budget book that outlines those numbers. And it's projected to be able to maintain your reserve policy for 1 to 2 years. And then that's when in the out years, absent any changes, basically if the expenditure growth continues to outpace revenue growth, then the out years, you know, we would need to take some additional actions. So that's what we're presenting here. Looking at the Q&E fund, the chart's a little bit different because, as I mentioned, we don't have a reserve policy here. So what this chart is really showing is revenues, being the yellow line, are growing slowly. expenditures, if we include the capital five-year plan, are that green line. And so this is showing that the capital needs essentially outpace the projected revenue, resulting in that orange negative. So what that means is we just wouldn't be able to fund all of those capital needs that we've identified for those 5 years. At least we wouldn't be able to fund them on a cash basis, so we may have to evaluate other financing options. And so it is important to note, though, that the Measure Q&E fund, like I said, is projected to be able to maintain an operating surplus of at least $0.9 million in all 5 years, because we're intentionally maintaining that cushion so that if we have sales tax revenue reductions, we can still cover our operating costs in that fund. When you put the two funds together, which, of course, you know, we don't do that on our books, but when you're doing this for illustrative purposes to show what capital the general fund and Q&E fund could cover together, you get this chart here, which the purple line across the top shows our capital needs for these two funding sources, and the orange bars show the funds available. And so you can see essentially visually this gap is widening between our capital needs and our funds available for capital. Moving to the Harbor Fund, this fund is able to maintain a small operating surplus for the full forecast period for the 4 to 5 years. That's based on Measure Q&E's current contributions to Harbor Department operating expenditures of $200,000 to $300,000 a year. And so that's what's allowing the Harbor Fund to continue to deliver its level of service without going into the red. The purple dotted line there shows the current fund balance of $0.8 million. We haven't yet, pending the capital needs assessment for the Harbor Fund, built in specific capital projects for the five-year period. And so if that $0.8 million fund balance were spent in 1 year on capital projects, then there would not be additional funds available for Harbor capital projects. So that still remains a need is for a funding source for Harbor capital projects. The sewer fund has a large fund balance now, and so the purple dotted line represents using that fund balance for programmed capital needs in the next couple of years. And then you can see that we're unable to maintain the ability to fund all capital in all 5 years. But that fund is projecting an operating surplus in all 5 years and the ability to meet reserve policies for at least the next couple of years. And a lot of this will depend on the timing of how those capital projects move forward and the costs that are actually incurred for those projects. The water fund, similar dynamic, but a different scale than the sewer fund. There is a fund balance currently, and the five-year CIP cost estimates essentially exceed the water fund's ability to cover those needs in the five-year period. And with the update of the One Water Plan, these numbers will continue to be updated. But, you know, what this is telling us, again, is that we can maintain an operating surplus in the water fund and in the sewer fund. We can continue to deliver those operating services. The city's ability to fund capital needs, and I'm referring to the wide variety of all of the capital projects that are needed for the water and sewer fund, will be a challenge in the out years. The construction cost index has increased double digits in the last couple of years. It's extremely, you know, high rates of growth for the cost of delivering capital projects, and you know, that's going to continue to be a challenge in all of the funds for these capital needs. On a positive note, we do have strong reserves, and so this represents this proposed budget is able to meet the minimum reserve policies in all funds. Council doesn't have a reserve policy for every fund, but there is one for all of the major funds and for some of the smaller funds as well, and so those are listed here. And specifically, the proposed budget proposes meeting the general fund minimum emergency reserve of approximately one-third of the operating budgets in the general fund and in the Q&E fund. We're not able to strive towards that 50% reserve level this year, as was, I think a hope in prior years. And a lot of that is because of the storm recovery expenditures and our other capital needs. And so the proposed budget, again, proposes meeting that minimum. All reserve policies are met in the water, sewer, harbor fund, and risk management and IT funds as well in the current budget year. It's the out years that that we need to continue to monitor and take corrective actions where needed. So in summary, where have we been? Where are we going? We, as I said, have come off of two really strong post-pandemic recovery years. Revenues are now leveling off. Measure E is continuing to really help the city maintain our ongoing services, which is excellent. And it is also allowing the city to address more capital needs than we have in prior years. And so even though we have continued unmet capital needs, I do want to recognize that the city's proposed investment in capital in this 23-24 budget and our budgeted investment in 22-23 represents a significant increase from before Measure E was passed. So that is progress, although unmet needs remain. I've discussed the storm recovery expenses already, and then the expenditure growth outpacing revenue growth. So we're continuing to monitor macroeconomics, the economic cooling. Those assumptions are all built into these forecasts. We are not projecting any dramatic reductions to revenues, certainly a slowing of revenue growth. We do have the looming pension challenges we discussed, and we're taking steps to continue to address those and need to continue to do that in future years. Having strong reserves will help us weather hopefully we don't have any future emergencies, but would help us weather one if another one comes our way. And I think there's a remaining theme, which has been in prior year budgets as well, of it's an ongoing exercise to continue to evaluate potential revenue opportunities. And so with that, the recommendation before you tonight, as I mentioned, is to receive the proposed budget. We've got it listed here as operating and capital. The intent is to try to break it up and discuss operating tonight, but you can certainly ask questions and we can discuss the capital as well. You will be receiving a detailed presentation on that from Mr. Qualick tomorrow night, though. And then, like I mentioned, please provide us any feedback either tonight or tomorrow night or both on any changes that you would like to see brought back to you for adoption on June 13th. And with that, I'm available. We have the whole staff team available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson-Rios. That was very comprehensive. Well, I'll start with council questions. To my left, Councilmember Edwards. Any questions? You're going to hold off. Councilmember Ford.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of questions. Okay, so I can tell after I had read through the budget online and then listening to your report, I could tell that you've taken into consideration a lot of CFAC's input and input from council and questions and really even improved what you've already done amazingly and answered most of my questions. But I do have a question. I have a few here. First, I want to thank you, Sarah Johnson-Rios, as well as your team for working really hard on this. This is, I don't even have a clue as to how many hours you put into this. So, and all the department heads that have contributed, I really appreciate all that work. So I want to also thank CFAC for their in-depth dive into this as well. I really appreciate our advisory boards and really do value what you bring to the table. And because of the items that they brought, I just would like to kind of just touch on them a little bit. And I'm aware of the Harbor Patrol vehicle. I've seen it. I've seen how the condition that it's in. And I'm curious if we were to take the recommendation and move it into the Harbor Fund, or yeah, funding it with the Harbor Fund instead, how would that affect the Harbor Fund? Would that, can you explain like why that would be not your recommendation to do that?
The impact on the Harbor Fund would be that it would be a one-time expenditure of that $72,000 for a vehicle, which would leave $72,000 less for future harbor capital needs.
Okay. And we know how much our harbor needs their funds. So, okay. My other question is, so when I'm looking at these, I understand where CFAC's coming from. It's a, it's an easy way to take money and put it away for possible future needs. However, I'm also looking at these items and thinking, okay, if we don't put money into the streets as much as we've already agreed to do, that's more deferred maintenance. That's, our streets will possibly cost more in the future to repair if we let them go into even more disrepair. Our PCI levels will drop. Then we're having to do more to maintain them. And so I'm curious, Mr. Qualick, if you could give us a little bit more information about what cutting $1 million would mean in the long term, in the long run, if we were to do that.
Thank you, Councilmember Ford. You're absolutely right that anything we don't do today will certainly cost more tomorrow. One reason for that is because prices go up. As Assistant City Manager Sarah Johnson-Rios mentioned, that the construction cost index has gone up double digits over the past couple of years. That's true. We're seeing that. Our bids are coming in higher and higher. So what we don't do today will just be bid higher later on. But to your point, anything that we don't do today will deteriorate between now and the time that we work on it. And pavement has this funny way of getting exponentially more expensive the worse it gets. It's not a you know, even slope. If you let pavement fail, it gets very expensive to reconstruct a street. And we're seeing that around the city now, particularly with Preston Lane, which hasn't been maintained in many years, where we're essentially seeing that our best option is to convert it to a gravel road for a couple of years before we figure out how to get money to reconstruct it fully. And so taking away half of the roadway budget, we would just be seeing more of that. I'll comment that if we do cut the road budget, we would essentially be going back to pre-COVID levels of funding for our road maintenance, which used to be around $700,000 or $800,000 a year. We would be at $1 million for this year, for the upcoming year. However, with inflation and increases in the construction cost index, That's about the same as what we've been doing historically, which, as we know, is not enough. So, yes, at the end of the day, it would just cost more for the city to put this work off.
Thank you, Mr. Qualick. Well, I've got you. And I brought this up during when we were goal setting, I think it was then or whenever, but anyway, the possibility of obtaining grant money if we were to have an active transportation plan. And while I know it takes a lot of money to put into that, do you have an educated opinion, an estimated time on when we could potentially reap the benefits of this sort of plan so that we actually make our money back and then some as far as being able to improve our transportation with that grant funding? You can't really know if you're going to get a grant. I get that. But in your experience in life, when cities do this, when they have a transportation plan, is it more often than not that they do get more benefits out of it than they put into it financially?
Thank you, Councilmember Ford. I'm not sure that I can answer that question, and I certainly won't make any predictions. But it's true that to be eligible to apply for active transportation money, the city must have an active transportation plan. And so I can give an example of where we might want to apply this kind of grant funding. As we look at the 141 intersection, regardless of what the city council decides to do there, because of the pedestrian safety issues there and the cyclist safety issues there that are a major concern of the communities, we'd want to include as part of our funding package for that project active transportation money. So we'd be applying for those funds aggressively. We'd be looking at doing that in the time frame of the next couple of years. I would also want to mention that one of the City Council's goals is public engagement. And having an active transportation plan, I know there's a sense that, you know, we're just doing studies and putting them on the shelf, but actually what's happening when we do these plans is we vet the concerns of the community publicly. We vet projects publicly. I believe there's currently a sense out there that staff is making decisions about what projects to do. When we put a plan in place, it's really a document that describes what the public and the community and the city council wants. And when we have that document, we can show it to grant funders and say, this is what our community wants and feels that we need. And that's what really makes it a powerful document when applying for grants.
Okay, thank you for that additional information about that, because I'm just looking at these and I can see where CFAC would say, well, you know, these are just potential money-making opportunities, but I'm just really curious, you know, how that really could benefit us and what that would mean if we were to say no. I have comments on the other two items, but I'll withhold those for now. Let me see if I don't think I had any. I would like to ask Ms. Johnson-Rios. I think you really did kind of cover it anyway, but just if you could reiterate one more time how well the city is reserved for the near term and how comfortable you feel as the expert if we were to not cut the budget. Cut these items out of the budget.
I think the council's reserve policy of 33% is based on the idea that if there were a significant emergency, the city would have the financial resources to continue operations for one-third of the year, or roughly 4 months. So, you know, that's one way to think about it. Another way to think about it is, for example, the storm from January 9th alone, we had an estimated storm damage total of $16 to $18 million. And so it's really hard to predict the type of emergency or fiscal stress that that we may encounter. 33% is probably a consistent reserve level for small cities, especially those that have more volatile revenue sources like transient occupancy tax and sales tax, like Morro Bay has. And citywide, all of the reserves combined, just to give you another way to look at it, are about 40% of the citywide operating budget. So while there are restricted sources and uses in there, and we obviously have to follow all of those laws, we have reserves in all of our major funds at some level.
Okay, thank you. I have one last question for now, and it's been brought up, you know, that we're, you know, pending that we don't have another huge catastrophe in the future where a lot of our funds are going to some emergency like the floods. Knowing that there's a potential for weather patterns to change and for us to have more catastrophic events like the floods that we've already had a few times this year, I don't know who in city staff, it might be multiple city staffers here, that could kind of give us an idea of how we as a city are better preparing ourselves now that we know what it looks like to have a major flood like that and the damage that it can bring, how we're better preparing so that we don't incur as much, I don't know if we can prevent damage necessarily, but what we're doing to not get into the position that we are in right now with as much financial
Well, a couple of things. Just my observation is that your city staff learned quite a bit between the January and the March. I showed up in March, and they had a pretty good handle on what they needed to do after the learning experience in January. And then moving forward, I think Greg Qualick has some plans for better understanding some of the hydrology and creek conditions. Anything you'd like to add to that?
Yes, thank you, City Manager Carpenter. I think the answer in how we prevent these sorts of disasters from happening again in the future really comes down to hazard mitigation. So we just submitted 9 notices of intent to apply for hazard mitigation funds through Cal OES. We've already been in touch with them. There's also an opportunity through FEMA to apply for hazard mitigation funds. This grant funding is very complicated, and we're learning as we go. But we hope to get some funding to protect our critical assets from floods or any other disasters. I'll be frank that that this stuff won't happen overnight. It may take several years. So part of the strategy is to get into some planning documents, as City Manager Carpenter referenced, a hydrology study of Morro Creek. We also want to have a waterways plan so we can pick out projects and get them funded for our storm drainage system. Unfortunately, we bear the brunt of a lot of the impacts of climate change because we are on the coast. I mean, we are like the front line of impact. And so we have a lot of issues in the harbor that we're still working on figuring out how to prevent future disasters. I don't know that we can ever do it with any level of guarantee, but it will certainly take money and funding. So one component of hazard mitigation for the future is finding that funding, whether it be through grants or other sources. So, on our side, what we're doing right now is looking for grant money to build these protections.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you right, it sounds like if we can get the grant money we've applied for over the next few years, we can start the mitigation process to help prevent the flooding that occurs in that sort of event, that weather event. But until those things happen, we're kind of at risk of a repeat event, and we could obtain a lot of this damage again and have to, as a city, deal with millions and millions of dollars worth of damage again. And so we could just be in the same position. So, that's like the Debbie Downer version of it. But, is that kind of really what we're looking at?
It's true, yes.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any further questions at this time.
Councilmember Barton?
The thing that jumped out at me as I was reading through this before we arrived here tonight was looking at the CFAC recommendation, and I would agree that all of those are probably they're good things to have in. They're also the things that you might look at if you were trying to cut the budget. But the one that stands out to me is the pavement management program, and whether or not cutting that kind of money out of it is that the smart thing to do given the condition of our streets? Because I think in some places we're at a point where how do you ever get that back again? And so to me that doesn't seem like the best thing to do. I'm inclined to think that we need to forge ahead on fixing our streets. Otherwise they have a tendency to kind of overtake you. They fall apart fairly quickly. So anyway, that was the one thing to me that really stood out.
Councilmember Landrum, questions?
I have some questions based on Councilmember Ford's questions. Mr. Qualick, when you say grant, these things can be done with grants or other sources. Can you elaborate on other sources?
Yeah, other sources would include the general fund, Measure Q&E, any other tax initiatives.
Okay. And then Oh, have we ever done an active transportation plan?
We did a bike and ped plan in, I believe, 2011.
And
so that it's not quite the same, but and I don't have all the information here to parse out the differences, but
has that gained us any grants for?
I'd have to check back. I don't know that it did. I'm not sure that the purpose of that document was to do that. So I'd need to learn more about that plan to answer that question.
And in general, how long does something like that last? If you have a plan like that done, or do they expire after a certain amount of time? Or
I don't have an answer to that question now. It's something I can get back to you on.
Okay. And I guess the same, I would ask the same kind of questions for the local road safety plan implementation and safety improvements.
Thank you for your question on that, Councilmember Landrum. I'd like to address that briefly because I did see that on the list. So the local road safety plan is something that was already budgeted for this fiscal year, and we've recently selected a consultant to work on that for the city. This item that you see in the Measure Q&E budget is actually to implement the projects that that plan will suggest. So this is actually not a planning document that we'd be seeking Measure Q&E funding for. It's to do the physical work. For example, the police department has a not ideal situation with its crossing from its parking lot to the police station. It's an issue that the city's known about for a number of years, but hasn't had the funding to do anything about. So we, out of the local road safety plan, this is a project that we'll be looking at, and we've talked to the police department about prioritizing that project. So what will come out of the local road safety plan are recommendations for a project at that location. So the $150,000, I believe it was, that we requested, part of that would go to this project. There's also other areas around the city that the Public Works Department and other departments have received complaints about in terms of safety. I think of Main Street south of Olive. The road narrows significantly there. There's not a sidewalk, but there's kind of a paved path that's technically not defined as a sidewalk. There's nowhere for bikes to go. So we would look at this area through that local road safety plan, and then use the monies that we've requested in Q&E for this upcoming year to start projects.
Okay, and this might be kind of random. I might be jumping around. This would be for Ms. Johnson-Rios. Are we anticipating any recovery now that, or maybe Mr. Qualick, too, now that all the Quintana Road work has been completed, with as far as businesses being able to be open and hopefully get more business?
Thank you, Councilmember Landrum. Do you mean from a sales tax revenue perspective?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I think it would be too early for us to see that in the data because our sales tax data lags by about 3 to 6 months until we actually get good information about that, but that's certainly something we can monitor. Absolutely.
Okay. And back to Mr. Qualick. The waterways plan, is that something that we've done, or is that something that you're suggesting be done?
Thank you, Councilmember Landrum. That's not a plan that we've done in the past. So just to give the council an idea of what that would look like, is we'd put together a plan for projects in the city's creeks. As we all know, the city doesn't own the creeks. The city only owns the creeks where we have bridges over them. And it becomes difficult. There's some difficult questions about who's responsible for maintaining them and who is responsible for initiating projects in those creeks. We met, we had a very good meeting with an individual at the city of San Luis Obispo, and their model is that they create a plan, and that's how they're able to prioritize projects in the creeks, because there is this private property question. You know, how do you prioritize projects that are on private property, which could be seen as a benefit to those property owners? And if they're done without a plan, it's maybe arbitrary and potentially makes the city vulnerable of accusations that there's some sort of unfairness happening. So with the protection of a waterways plan, we'd be able to prioritize projects that would help prevent the kinds of flooding that we saw during the January storms. That would be the goal there.
And just in the interest of self-reliancy for a city, is it ever possible to do any of these types of studies in-house? Like, do we have enough, based on all other studies that we've compiled over the years, such as the bike path study and others, is there not a way to cut and paste and kind of put some of these things together to create our own plans without relying on outside, you know, consultants and the cost involved with that?
Thank you, Councilmember Landrum, for the question. It's an interesting question. I imagine there may be some times when that is true, that staff could do it in-house. That would be very rare. If it was true, it wouldn't really align with our staffing levels. In public works, particularly in the engineering division, we are totally overextended in terms of the projects that we're responsible for. And utilizing consultants allows us to continue to do more work that the city needs and that the city council has asked for. For most of these kinds of plans, we work with specialists that do these plans all over the state, and so they have expertise that our staff doesn't have necessarily. So I would say in 99.9% of cases, it would not be advisable. I certainly wouldn't advise a city council to have staff do this ourselves.
Oops, sorry. Just there isn't anything that's kind of redundant in what we've already done. Do you know what I'm saying?
Not that
yeah.
I've seen.
Okay. No. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to take a break for now. Thanks.
Thank you. With that, we'll open public comment for C2.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. Terry Simons, Morro Bay. This seems to be my night to praise city staff. I don't really know much about our assistant city administrator, Sarah Johnson Rios, until tonight. I am overwhelmed with praise for what I've seen her put together here, but more specifically the way in which she's been able to present what some might interpret, I being one of them, bad news in a most positive way. It's not that we haven't had personnel like this in the past. She just seems to shine even more in the way in which she is presented tonight. I did have one very small question. I don't need an answer to it, but it wasn't clear to me whether the 102 full-time employee equivalents counted the 30 part-time full-time equivalents. Not a big deal. Second on my praise list tonight is City Engineer, Public Works Director Qualick. When he first came on board and in some of his presentations, I have probably been harsh in my criticism, which I'm known to do, but in most specifically going through the Main Street intersection presentation that he did a couple of weeks ago and understanding in light of the budget allocations that we see in the presentation that's just been given, Mr. Qualick has shined in a clarity of understanding how to spend the largest portion of the city's money. And I must say, I feel very relieved that he is on board with our team and very confident in what I see in his perspective and his depth of understanding. Considering his relatively short tenure, he seems to have an impressive street-by-street knowledge of our community. And I hope that my next phase will be a little more palatable. I was quite shocked to see that the contract for Corella Engineers in tomorrow night's agenda, which I'm sorry I won't be able to attend, is proposed to be continued. Now, there may be a legal reason that in order to continue further liability, you have to continue the contract. But quite frankly, I've been very disappointed with the work of Corella Engineers, but most specifically in the excessive overruns in the connecting structure, the conveyance portion of the work, which not only did they design, but they supervised and they signed off on what I would consider an excessive amount of extras. I would hope that there is a way, without giving up our future rights to get some of our money back, that we could terminate that contract. And unfortunately, I can't come tomorrow night, but I would have significant more to say on that tomorrow night if I were here. Thank you.
Betty Winholtz again. A few comments. One, I think would behoove the council to lower our reserves. I understand that the 33% is for a 4 months buffer, but I think 3 months buffer is plenty. I think you could reduce that to 25%. I think, and that you should eliminate the goal of trying to get to 50. Being the town that we are, the kind of money situation we're in, I think that's pie in the sky and we need to be more realistic. I think that would free up $2 to $3 million that could be used in other places. I agree with CFACT in terms of eliminating all those programs, but I agree with Councilmember Barton except for the paving. It's mandatory. We just have to, as staff has said, continue to do that paving. And we have been told by the expert last year over again that $2 million is the minimum just to maintain the poor quality that we have. So I'm hoping that you listen to that and continue that $2 million or more. I'm curious why our water costs are going up when we no longer need to pay for state water infrastructure. I know there'll be some pay there, but that has expired. Maybe you've already talked about that, but I'd like to know about that. And maybe it has to do with this well thing that we have to do as part of the WRF. And if so, then let's get rid of it because it's just a drain, a financial drain on our money. I'd like to know what you're doing in terms of revenue for the harbor, in terms of still looking at sales tax or bed tax or reducing their overhead, in terms of giving them more money rather than trying to figure out things like paid parking and other kinds of things. What kind of revenue sources are coming in for the harbor department? I would like to this active transit plan, I've not frankly heard it before. I don't know if it's that something new or if I'm just out of touch. Is that the only source of transportation money, or are there other sources that we could be looking at so we don't have to spend the $67,000? So I don't know why grants are dependent on that or if that's the source these days. I'm not knowledgeable about that. Spending $150,000 on cutting trees, I think, is a lot. I think there are ways that we need to deal with our sidewalks rather than look at removing trees. That's my beef. And then I guess just the last little thing is that if we stop hiring people, won't we have less PERS? I mean, PERS is never going to go down, but it can't go up as much if we stop hiring. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? AGP, do we have anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment and bring it back to council. Thank you, Terry and Betty. The water costs, Greg? Mr. Qualick?
Thank you, Mayor. What we're seeing in the water fund in the, from that slide that Assistant City Manager Sarah Johnson Rios had up was some high-cost capital projects that are projected in the out years, specifically the Nutmeg Pressure Zone, project, which we think could be up to an $18 million project. If you put it into perspective, had we never had the wharf, $18 million would probably be one of the biggest projects we ever did. We're not sure that the project is going to cost that much. It's a placeholder in the budget right now, and that project estimate was developed by very good engineers using formulas. And that project involves a lot, including increasing the size of Nutmeg Tank, eliminating the Elena tanks, one of which has already been decommissioned because it was in such poor condition. There was a crack going across it that could have opened up, eliminating the Vachon Booster Station, and upgrading infrastructure, largely because of fire flow issues due to the presence of Del Mar Elementary School. It is a necessary project, but that is the one that is really sinking the water fund. With that said, I would be remiss if I didn't remind the City Council and the public as well that every year our costs go up, but our revenues are flat, and that's because we don't have a CPI escalator on our water rates or sewer rates. And so it is inevitable, even if we stop doing all projects, that at some point we have to increase our revenues by raising rates. And based on the projections that Ms. Johnson-Rios showed, you know, if we want to do capital projects that are necessary to maintain our infrastructure, it may be necessary to increase those rates. So that's just something as being the person responsible for utilities and the maintenance of our infrastructure, I'd like to call out.
Thank you for that answer. I appreciate it, Mr. Kwolek. And I know tomorrow night we'll have a lot more time to talk about capital projects and all those things. So as that's the main part of the budget tomorrow night. So unless there's any more questions, we'll go to council comments. Any questions?
I have one quick question. And this is because it was brought up about uprooting trees. Do we have other methods of improving sidewalks without removing trees? Is there another way to handle it when we do have roots coming up and, you know, consistent issues? Does it always mean removal of the tree, or have we worked to try other methods of remedying the hazards that come with uneven sidewalks?
Thank you for the question, Councilmember Ford. Depending on the condition of the uplift of the sidewalk, we do. We have a contractor that we use, I believe they're called Precision Concrete, where they will go in and saw off at an angle a sidewalk so that if it is uplifted, that it becomes flat. The issue there is that we see is we'll do that, and then 3 years later it lifts farther up, and there comes a point in the concrete where there's no more concrete to cut. If you cut through the concrete, you're just cutting into dirt. The purpose of that that request is not necessarily to remove trees. What happens when we fix sidewalks that are in really bad shape is we have to cut roots. And so when we cut roots, that means that the tree, you know, does not have a good chance of success, and then we replace the tree. I would also want to remind City Council here that these sorts of uplifts and displacements in sidewalks and driveways in the public right-of-way leave the city vulnerable to claims against the city when there are trips and falls. As some of the council members I know learned at the JPIA conference. And so part of this is being proactive so that we can spend a little bit of money now to save money on those sorts of claims later.
Thank you. That's my only question.
Thank you. Any other questions that we can't reserve till tomorrow? Good. As long as we can. Yeah. You have a question now? Ask.
Well, I think it's just more for me clarification. I feel like there is this subjectivity thing going on with the understanding of Measure Q and E, and it's confusing as somebody who's coming in here as a council person and who's new and who's trying to understand. I can read this on here and what you've provided us, and understand it as defined here, but yet I can look at some of the things that we're budgeting for, and I can say, is that something that was really defined within the parameters of Q or E? And I think my first question is just so I have a clear understanding, is at what point did Q and E come together?
Thank you, Councilmember Edwards. Measure E was passed and administered by the state as a 1.5% sales tax. So the CDTFA, the California Department of Tax and Financing, I'm going to miss the last word of the acronym, administers it as one tax, and we receive the revenues as one lump sum. So that began with the collection of Measure E funding in April of 2021.
And then I guess I just want clarification. As you see it defined, would you say that traffic safety would be included in Measure Q and E?
I think that you're correct to identify that there is some room for interpretation and subjectivity in any of these items, and I think mm-hmm. that's where CFAC's scope is to provide input to council on that. Ultimately, and the city attorney can certainly weigh in on the legality of expenditures, and these are all legal expenditures of the funds, mm-hmm. so it's really a policy decision for council on how to take CFAC's input and allocate those funds.
Councilmember Edwards, just to clarify in terms of the law, both Measure Q and E are general taxes, and so the money goes unrestricted into the general fund and can be used for any lawful public purpose. There, however, was a ballot label for each of these that described possible uses. Those ballot labels that the voters considered did say that the money could be used for any purpose. Council, since these were passed, have historically looked at some of the intended uses, but I'm not here to say what you should or shouldn't do with the money. I'm just letting you know that in terms of the law, they are general taxes, and they can be used for any public purpose, and they go into the general fund.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeier. For clarification, 16 to $18 million in storm damage approximately is what we're looking at. Is that what you said?
That was the preliminary estimate, and the Public Works team is actively at work with FEMA to begin to try to identify which of those items we may be able to be more likely to receive reimbursement for. So for a city of our size, it will not be possible for us to address the full scope of that estimate until we have more information about potential reimbursement. So we've allocated $1.8 million at mid-year and $1.9 million proposed to begin to address the highest priority damages.
And so we're looking at this as not basically including in the budget for this year what we may potentially receive from FEMA or from insurance or such.
That's correct. I think it's also important to note that while we're not counting on the revenues from mm-hmm. reimbursement yet, we are also not counting on the full scale and scope of the expenditures. Mm-hmm. So the more we learn as we go through the process with CJPIA on the insurance side and with FEMA, as well as these other hazard mitigation funds that Mr. Kwalik described, it is possible that we would be returning to council both on the expenditure side or the revenue side at a later date.
That would be great. I think I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.
Mayor, may I? I have an update on a question Councilmember Landrum asked.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so Councilmember Landrum, you asked about the ATP and our prior plan, which we did in 2011. The ATP was actually created in 2013, so our prior plan predates ATP, which is why we don't have an ATP plan. And conversing with our city engineer Eric Riddio, he stated that ATP grant requirements change over time, and that's something that requires fresh updates to plans like that. So in that sense, they do expire. And they also want fresh traffic data, accident trends, and public input. So that's one reason why plans get updated over time. Or three reasons, rather.
Thank you. So it sounds like you should be really strategic about when you do them.
I think that's fair to say, yes.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
And I would like to add that, you know, over time, you know, our tourism has significantly increased as well. So the amount of traffic has been a significant increase in the last 10-plus years. So something like this is important in taking that into consideration. So thank you for clarifying that for us.
Thank you, staff. Thank you to our finance department, all of you, and to our department heads. We'll switch over to comments here, and then this is going to be a receive tonight and continue tomorrow. So I think we'll take a few minutes for some comments, and then we can pick up tomorrow with the rest of it. I just the Q&E, I appreciate CFAC, their time and their comments on this, and understand where they're coming from in wanting to talk about some revenue retention. And yet we talk about, you know, as one of our citizens shared tonight, the, you know, amount that's in our reserve fund already being so excessive. And I appreciate you explaining, Ms. Johnson-Rios, about that money basically would be doubling the reserve. I didn't really understand that before, so thank you for that clarification on that. So as much as I want to be responsible to the Q&E, regardless of it being a general fund tax, we all know what it was sold for, and respecting our community and our citizens who pay that along with our visitors, you know, I want to try and stay along those lines as much as we can. And I do feel that Harbor, you're just going to move, you're going to rob Peter to pay Paul, as they always say, and move the pots of money around. If we take money from the general fund or the Harbor fund instead of Q&E for the truck that they need that is, yeah, rusted through. And so we're just swapping it around. And as much as I respect, you know, their position, I also realize that it needs to be replaced. And so we're struggling in that Harbor fund already, and I don't want to try and do without something that they need, because we didn't authorize an expense for a vehicle when Harbor is under that umbrella. So as far as that goes, I support the expenses to Q&E. Thank you for the explanation, Mr. Qualick. That helps a lot. You know, I want to make sure that our police officers, public safety officers, are safe crossing the road. That's the crosswalk right north of the roundabout, correct? Is that where that is that you're talking about?
I guess it'd be west.
West of the roundabout. Yeah. Thank you. I know it was right over there somewhere. I think that we're challenged with inflation to keep up with doing this. And the number one goal that we set was about public infrastructure, whether it's this building, AGP replacement equipment, the roads, all those things. It's been a desire for this community, and it's been a desire for this council to move forward on that. And I want to address it, and I want us to keep moving with the momentum that way. HDL gives us reports. Have we not gotten an update? I have not seen it in since last year. Did I miss something?
Reports on sales tax revenue?
Yeah, the
They're posted on the city's website each quarter. So I can send the council a link to where those are at.
So it was there in March? I haven't seen it in months.
It's by quarter, yeah. And so there's a two-page summary. It's trailing by two quarters, so I'm trying to remember. I think the last quarter we have is the fourth quarter of the calendar year 2022.
So that's why I haven't seen it since last year.
And so we haven't yet received quarter one of 2023, but we should be receiving that within the next month.
So it's 6 months behind?
Almost 6 months.
Wow, okay. Yeah. I know that somebody had asked us about that also, and I realized then that I hadn't seen it for a while. So But, you know, 418 pages, and it was, you know, my fifth full budget and from when I was here before, and it was actually the easiest to navigate. So thank you for that. I appreciate it. And with that, I will turn over to council member comments to my right. Anything, council member Barton? Yeah, well, we will be looking at it again. Yes, you're right. To my left, any comments?
I just wanted to say thank you so much to Sarah and her staff. I really appreciate, you know, I have not ever seen a budget like this, so having it be my first time, it was very easy to navigate, and I really appreciate your candor in answering questions that might seem easy. How do you, you know, you should know that, but it's really appreciated, and I think the general community who maybe is like myself who has never done this before also would appreciate that. So thank you so much.
I'd just like to add that when you're reading through the proposed budget, I had mentioned this to Ms. Johnson-Rios previously, that a lot of there's a lot of repetition in the report that kind of pulls in the different facts in different areas to give you a really well-rounded idea as to what this budget truly means and how it's being implemented or how it will be implemented. And so back to your point, Councilmember Edwards, I think that that really does paint a picture for the person who may not be really savvy in this area of their life, you know, finances and that sort of thing. And it really does put it in layman's terms. And so I appreciate the work that went into it, and I know your expertise to bring it down to a level where we can all, not that we wouldn't be able to understand at your level, but when you're the expert, it's sometimes I can understand it would be hard to make it to where everyone else can understand what you're trying to explain, and your team has done an excellent job again, making it to where we can understand it and understand it well. So thank you for that. And that's all I have to say for tonight. To be continued.
If I could, sorry, Mayor, just very briefly pass on the acknowledgments. I really appreciate it. I would just be remiss not to pass it on to the department heads and all their staff that this is definitely a group effort, and we're glad you find it useful information.
Yes, and to your team, and I'm sorry to be losing one of those members. So with that, we will move on to council declaration of future agenda items. Looking to my left, nothing. Looking to my right, nope, not at this time. So our next regular meeting is Tuesday, June 13th, but for all of you who want to continue this conversation with us, we will see you tomorrow for our continued budget. Thank you very much. Thank you, AGP.